presence of evil is kickstarting people to wonder about the good.
That's what happened to me.
That's what happened to you?
Oh, yeah. I had a direct experience with it.
In the milieu of journalism or just...
Nope. In my bed at night, and I got attacked while I was asleep with my wife and four dogs in the bed and mauled. Physically mauled.
In a spiritual attack by a demon?
Yeah, by a demon. Or by something unseen that left...
Is that right?
Claw marks on my sides, on my...
So it left physical marks?
Oh, they're still there. Yeah, yeah. A year and a half ago.
Was your wife terrified? I know you were.
I wasn't. I was totally confused. I woke up and I was couldn't breathe and I thought I was going to suffocate. And I walked around outside and then I walked in and my wife and dogs had not woken up and they're very light sleepers. And then I had these terrible pains on my rib cage and on my shoulder. And I was just in my boxer shorts and I went and flipped on the light in the bathroom and I had four claw marks on either side underneath my arms and on my left shoulder. And they're bleeding.
Wait, they were bleeding?
They're bleeding, yeah. No, no actual claw marks. And I sleep on my side, so I wasn't clawing myself. I don't have long nails. And they didn't fit my hands anyway. But yeah, that happened. So I'm not from a world where things like that happen. I never heard of anything like that happening before. I had no idea what that was. I knew it was spiritual immediately.
You did? Okay, that was going to be my question.
Yeah. I don't understand to this day. I'm not going
to
put it...
You didn't try to... refute the spiritual part in your own mind. You went right into the...
Well, it didn't make any sense, and it doesn't now. But I'm not from a, what do they call it, faith tradition that talks about things like that or even acknowledges their existence. Like, there's nothing like that. I've never heard anybody say anything like that in my whole life.
What was the next day like?
Well, the next morning I woke up and I thought, that was the weirdest dream I've ever had. And then I saw blood on my sheets and I realized that was not a dream at all. I was like, oh, my assistant was like the only evangelical Christian I know, you know, well enough to call with something bizarre like that, totally bizarre like that. And she said, oh, yeah, no, that happens. Yeah, people are attacked in their bed by demons. What? What are you even talking about? Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not leaving anything out, and I'm not pretending to understand that. I can only say what happened to me and that did happen to me, and then I was seized with this very intense desire to read the Bible, which I then started without any study aids or anything. I bought a Bible that didn't have any. I'm not interested in editorializing in the Bible. I just want to read it and see what's in there myself. I have very low levels of trust for Christian pastors, most of whom, you know, I'm just not a fan at all. And sorry to say that, but that's how I feel. And so I don't want to hear other people's opinions. I just want to see what's in there. And I spent a year and a half reading it, and then I started rereading it. And it was just a transformative experience for me, but I'm not, you know, holding myself out as someone from whom you could get theological advice, because I'm
sure,
not.
Sure, of course.
I don't know. I don't understand any of it. But, yeah, that happened.
Do you think God allowed the demon?
I have no idea what happened. All I know is I was dead asleep with my wife and dogs, and I woke up with claw marks on my rib cage underneath my arms. And it didn't even make sense. My arms would... Anyway, whatever. I'm not... No one has to believe me. I don't care.
It doesn't matter.
But that happened to me.
Look.
And so I just was like, wow, that... That's real. Whatever that is, I'm even not sure what it is.
It's very real. And so then that presence of that evil...
Yeah.
...launches something.
Okay, absolutely incredible. Tucker Carlson describes being mauled by a demon mid-sleep, saying it left claw marks on my sides. I guess it's confirmed. Tucker Carlson is literally Solomon Cain. I think I've read it on the show before. There's a excerpt. It's like my favorite part. Robert E. Howard, author who created Conan the Barbarian, amongst others. Solomon Cain was one of his characters who, I think it's in the story Skull in the Stars, fights a living manifestation, a shadowy demon composed of hate and malice, and apparently went after Tucker Carlson. So Tucker Carlson is Solomon Cain. I don't know if I've ever been more jealous of somebody being attacked by a demon. Sounds kind of awesome. It sounds like he's been chosen for some higher calling. Incredible.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We are coming to you live this Friday morning, the 1st of November. Hope everybody had a good Halloween.
feel like Halloween's one of those holiday that, like, yeah, maybe it's the same with all holidays. I don't know. For me, with Halloween, it's either really good or really bad. Like, it can be amazing. You have little kids running around getting candy. Like, you're in the right neighborhood. It's festive. And, you know, like I said, just, you know, groups of little kids fighting over candy. It can be very fun. Or if you live in a not so great neighborhood, or a neighborhood that's been, well, taken over by people that don't celebrate Halloween, it can be incredibly depressing. Just like, where are all the children? Remembering your Halloween in your youth, when you used to run around and just kids everywhere getting into mischief, and then you are walking around, there's just like one, there's like one van full of people that aren't even wearing costumes, just joylessly going around and gathering as much candy as they possibly can. And they're adults, you know. Yeah, it can be pretty depressing not living in a high trust society. But that's just the way it is, I guess. We got a lot to talk about today. We have J.D. Vance on Joe Rogan. We've got yet another scam about Donald Trump, total fraud, that we'll get into, as well as some more election news, some Russian news, of course, and a ton of great videos to get to, including some very, very questionable ones. We're going to revisit, maybe briefly, but we will revisit the floods in Spain. Take a look at those, as there have been some interesting watercraft right off the coast of Spain just before the weather hit. I'm saying it's a weather weapon. Or is it? It could have been socialism. I'll give you all of the suppositions about what is behind the massive deadly floods in Spain. 158 people now dead there. But the election will be our main topic. We'll take your phone calls, do an open line Friday situation here. But we'll begin today, as we do every day, with our daily dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your daily dispatch for Friday, the 1st of November, 2024. White House altered Biden's garbage transcript despite concern from stenographers. The transcript alteration attempted to water down Biden's insult of Trump supporters. Yes, folks, the White House altered the transcript of President Biden's controversial garbage comment despite the concerns of stenographers, Fox News Digital has confirmed. In an email viewed by Fox News Digital, a supervisor sounded the alarm on the White House press office's breach of protocol and spoilation of transcript integrity between the stenography and press offices. If there's a difference in interpretation, the press office may choose to withhold the transcript, but cannot edit it independently, the supervisor wrote in an email. Our stenography office transcript released to our distro, which includes the National Archives, is now different than the version edited and released to the public by the press office staff. That's right. The official White House stenographer wrote down the comment accurately, where Biden very clearly and on video called Trump supporters garbage. Then the press office took it upon themselves to insert an apostrophe and make the outrageous gaslighting claim that he was actually talking about garbage belonging to the supporters. Totally absurd. So now you have an inter-White House conflict with the stenography office calling out the press office and pointing out that the archives are now going to be different than the official press release. But hey. If you're gonna be operating an empire of lies, you're gonna have some mix-ups sometimes. Okay, when your entire governmental apparatus is upheld by, you know, the flimsy facade of just outright lies, there's gonna be some inconsistencies there. You're gonna have some things in the archive that are different from what's put out to the public, but that's just the price you pay for living in a world consumed by deception. It's really insane. We'll get back to that and just talk about the overwhelming deception confronting us from every angle. Truly is shocking. Moving on, U.S. weighs NATO allies offer to shoot down Russian missiles over Ukraine. Bipartisan leaders of the U.S. Helsinki Commission are pushing President Joe Biden to approve Warsaw's proposed scheme to shoot down Russian missiles, according to a letter sent October 28th, obtained by The Hill. In the letter sent by Representative Joe Wilson of South Carolina and Steve Cohen of Tennessee, asked Biden to grant Poland the authority to intercept and neutralize missiles over Ukraine, particularly those threatening to encroach upon Polish airspace. Again, we'll get back into this. We'll actually spend some time on Ukraine today, but I'm glad to know that our representatives from Tennessee and South Carolina are dealing with the real issues that confront Americans trying to get Poland permission to shoot down Russian missiles over Ukraine for the ill-advised imperial project of the U.S. elite. Meanwhile, President Trump sues CBS News for $10 billion for deceptively editing 60 Minutes interview with Kamala Harris. President Biden brings this action to redress the immense harm caused to him, to his campaign, and to tens of millions of citizens in Texas and across America by CBS's deceptive broadcasting conduct. The lawsuit stated, according to Fox News, former President Trump is suing CBS News for $10 billion in damages, stating that the network practiced deceptive conduct for the purpose of election interference in its interview with Vice President Kamala Harris. Trump attorney said the complaint comes due to CBS's partisan and unlawful acts of election and voter interference through malicious, deceptive, and substantial news distortion calculated to confuse, deceive, and mislead the public. Fake News 60 Minutes was caught editing Kamala's answers to make her sound coherent and normal. In fact, it was so bad that 60 Minutes spliced her nonsensical answer and replaced it with a completely separate sentence that she said earlier in the interview. Mixing and matching questions and answers, this isn't journalism. It is outright deliberate fraud. And I hope they go down forever. Then we have this. And we're going to focus on this story. Because it's just the latest. Just the latest. This week, there's been like five examples of this. Here's a headline from CNN. Trump says war hawk Liz Cheney should be fired upon in escalation of violent rhetoric against his opponents. You think that's true? Do you think any of that is even remotely true? Donald Trump said former Liz Cheney is a war hawk who should be fired upon as he raged against one of his most prominent intra-party critics while campaigning Thursday night in Arizona. We'll show you the clip. It is very clear, absolutely no uncertainty about this. Donald Trump was criticizing Liz Cheney for being a chicken hawk, a war hawk that never has to actually be confronted with the effects of her decisions, saying that it's really easy to start a war when you're not the one fighting it, but she would probably have a different opinion if it was her that was being fired upon. This has been transmuted, lied about by CNN and everybody else on the left to say that Donald Trump called upon Liz Cheney to be fired upon. Now, we'll get back to that in just a moment, but it is a lie, and we'll show you the video. And that shouldn't be surprising to you at all. And finally, we have this. Tucker Carlson describes being mauled by a demon mid-sleep, left claw marks on my side. A video clip from an upcoming documentary called Christianities features popular American journalist Tucker Carlson recalling the time he was attacked in his sleep by what can only be described as a demon that apparently left physical claw marks on him. We showed that video in the first five, which I think it means you're doing something right. I think when the devil himself has to take physical form to try to intimidate you out of your path in life, she's like, yeah, it's amazing. Like, Tucker should be very proud. It's just incredible. I believe him completely, of course, and maybe we'll play that clip again a little bit later in the show. But that's your Daily Dispatch, and I want to return to this story about Trump and war hawk Liz Cheney. And there's a couple things about this. I'd like to take a moment now and just imagine, because in a way it almost explains why people are so insane about Trump. Imagine if you believed everything you heard about him. I mean, just this week, like, just imagine this. Just clear your mind of like what you know about Trump and what he actually says and the full context of video clips that shows his statements are not just fine. They like are perfectly logical and nothing out of the ordinary. He's never calling for violence. Like, just pretend you don't know all of that and imagine if you were a mainstream media consumer, what you would think the last week has been. I don't even know if I can remember all of the examples, but if you're paying attention to the mainstream media, according to them, first he held a Nazi rally in Madison Square Garden where, you know, one of the speakers just called Puerto Rico garbage. And so obviously that is reflective of, you know, Trump's deep held beliefs and will probably inform his policy, I'm sure. So he has a Nazi rally where the only thing that you hear about it is that some guy called Puerto Rico straight up garbage. Then he goes on Joe Rogan and calls all women stupid. Then he goes in and, you know, gives a press conference in a garbage vest to all of his stupid followers who actually believe that he became a garbage man. Right. They actually think that was real. They don't understand that that was a very obvious, you know, PR stunt campaign event. Just goofy thing. No, they think he was really a garbage man. These stupid Trump supporters. He tricked them into first thinking he worked at McDonald's and then worked at the garbage shop. And then he gives a speech where he says, you know, I don't care that women don't like it. I'm going to do it anyway. Probably talking about abortion, right? If I had to guess. I mean, that's what they basically said he was talking about. He's going to ban abortion because he hates women. He's going to track their periods. And he's going to... He said, actually, we saw the video of him saying, I don't care that women don't like it. I'm going to say it anyway. And then he does another press conference today where he says, or yesterday, where he says, you know, Liz Cheney should be shot. Like, imagine if that's what you thought had happened over the last week. Obviously, every one of these, it's not just wildly out of context and has nothing to do with what he's actually talking about. But like they're all, it's also significantly different than they say. Every single one of these, right? One, it's like a stand-up comedian, roasting. Trump calls for Cheney's execution. That's a joke, right? Is that seriously the front page of Drudge right now? Trump calls for Cheney's execution. My God. Trump calls for Cheney's execution. All right. I guess let's just clear the air right out and just go to the video. Okay. Which one is it? Clip number 10 here. Here's Trump on Liz Cheney calling her a chicken hawk and saying she would change her warmongering tune if she was the one who was placed in the line of fire. Let's just watch this just to get it out of the way so we can then explain what's actually happening here with the context and the full understanding that no, Donald Trump wasn't calling for Liz Cheney's execution, although I'm going to. Let's watch the video first.
And Cheney was so, he said, I really want to thank you. He said, now I'm so glad that I actually endorsed you. It's amazing, but that you would do this. And I didn't speak to him about it. But then, you know, go a couple of years forward or go now. And I don't blame him for sticking with his daughter. But his daughter is a very dumb individual, very dumb. She's a radical war hawk. Let's put her with a rifle standing there with 9 barrels shooting at her, okay? Let's see how she feels about it. You know, when the guns are trained on her face. You know, they're all war hawks when they're sitting in Washington in a nice building saying, oh, gee, Will, let's send 10,000 troops right into the mouth of the enemy. But she's a stupid person. And I used to have, I'd have meetings with a lot of people, and she always wanted to go to war with people. So... whether it's her, whether it's Dick. I was surprised a little bit with Dick Cheney. I didn't know him at all. I only had essentially the one or two phone calls, and it was only a call saying, thank you very much for doing that for Scooter Libby. That was nice. And Scooter Libby, by the way, was beyond that. He couldn't believe that it happened. Nobody would do it. They should have done that for him years before. But I was a little surprised because I actually thought that Dick Cheney would go with me over his daughter, and he didn't. And you know what? I understand it. It's your daughter, and you go. But she's a bad person.
She's a bad person. Like, clearly, right? Clearly, he says these people are very brave when they're sitting in offices in Washington, D.C., saying, let's send 10,000 troops into the mouth of the enemy. Yeah, it's... it's obviously something that everybody should understand. Like, this isn't really that confusing. It's like something that liberals used to say all the time about Dick Cheney and George W. Bush. Like, this is the crazy part. They all agree with Trump. So why are they lying about this? Because they want Trump out, because they want the war hawks in. But here's another thing that I think needs to be really thought about. What is the punishment for starting wars? I mean, we execute people in America for murder. That's killing one person. What happens when you start on purpose, by design, and through deception, a conflict that kills a million people? What happens? What is the lawful punishment for treason? So, you know, Trump clearly did not call for Liz Cheney to be killed. He didn't call for her to be executed. And this is coming from the side that, by the way, has literally tried to kill Trump twice. Like, when there's a sniper hiding in the bushes or on a roof and gets a couple pot shots off at Liz Cheney, then you can come talk to me about violent rhetoric. Then we can be very concerned about where this is going. But I got to be honest with you. I don't want to see a bunch of people out there going, no, my goodness, Trump would never suggest that we execute enemies of the state. Maybe that's where we're at. Maybe we'll actually get some justice for the despicable war criminals that have sold out our entire country, committed open treason against us over and over. I mean, Liz Cheney sat there and presided over a show trial in which she essentially tried to get the former president thrown in prison on entirely trumped up charges, where only the prosecution got to present witnesses and evidence, and the defense was declared guilty before the procedures ever started. So, I mean, everyone involved in this is treasonous. Everyone involved in this committed a crime that, you know, maybe capital punishment's a correct response for the sake of our country. The last thing we want is vigilante violence. The last thing we want is people trying to take this into their own hands. It is incumbent on the system and necessary for the survival of the system that the people who have done the most to destroy the system and kill God only knows how many people and spend God only knows how much American money, which is just a measure of energy, right? It's just a measure of economic output, which is really a measure of man hours worked and effort put in, which is just a measure of time, which is just a measure of human life, which is our most precious resource. So, like, how many trillions of dollars, i.e. trillions upon trillions of hours of human life, have been wasted by these people on their absolutely treasonous designs? And what is the correct punishment for them? Now, I get what Trump is saying. He's not saying that she should be executed by a firing squad. He's saying that she'd be a lot less prone to start wars if she was the one that actually had to fight them. That's obvious. But I, for one, am calling for Liz Cheney, Dick Cheney, George W. Bush. George H.W. Bush is dead already, right? He got away with it. I think they should all be placed on trial, and I think the most severe lawful punishment should be leveled at them. And we'll have to look up what the punishment for treason is. But just, you know, it's this idea that's like, oh my God, no, how dare you? It's like, these people start wars. These people kill literally millions of people. You want us to feel sorry for them? You want us to be outraged and appalled that somebody might say, you know, what are they going to think when they're the ones facing the barrel of a gun? I don't know. I don't think you should be able to start wars and get away with it, personally, off of lies, knowingly, making millions or billions from them, killing millions of people, and then retiring to paint like George W. Bush. Now, the real crime here is that these people are not just out and about and walking around, but still like lauded and celebrated and treated like leaders and elite in this country. It's a sin. It's a nation-destroying sin. These people are a global terrorist, but we're not supposed to say anything mean about them. These people have paved the way for our complete and utter destruction. But we're supposed to be nice to them. We're supposed to talk about them in glowing terms. Yeah, I don't think so. I really don't think so. Again, this is just me. This is just me, Harrison, talking. Donald Trump obviously doesn't believe this, or else he would have done something about it in the first 4 years of his administration. Clearly, he was not talking about making Liz Cheney face a firing squad. But I don't want to have some knee-jerk reaction, as if a firing squad wouldn't be a perfectly appropriate punishment for people that have destroyed our country from within. But that's just me. Okay? That's just me. He calls her very dumb, a stupid person, and the moron. Trump's suggestion that Cheney be fired upon represents an escalation of the violent language he's used to target his political foes. That's what I mean. We've got another story. I don't know if I'll be able to find it. Here's the stack. I think it's somewhere in here, but I'll find out who exactly it was. Here it is. Former New Jersey Governor Christine Todd Whitman, quote, "I want to smack Trump across the face." Like, this is the thing. This is the thing. It's every time. It's over and over. It's a comedian makes a kind of bad joke about Puerto Rico, where he insinuates it's a floating island of garbage. And the response to that is the president of the United States to say blatantly, Trump supporters are garbage. And then the transcript, you know, is changed secretly and illegally by the press office. Donald Trump says, yeah, that war hawk wouldn't be quite such a warmonger if she was the one that had to face the bullets flying at her. And in response, former New Jersey governor being like, I'm going to hit Trump in the face. They're like, oh, Trump's violent rhetoric is escalating. Let's kill him. On Monday, American Journal will go live at 8 a.m. beginning the marathon coverage of the 2024 presidential election. We'll be live 8 a.m. Monday. And of course, Tuesday, we will be here all night, as long as it takes. I hope you join us, and I hope you can contribute to keeping us on air and here to inform you about all of the bizarre goings-on by going to thealexjonesstore.com, drjonesnaturals.com, infowarsstore.com. We have a few more updates to the ongoing election. It's kind of interesting. I guess we're just normalizing the election taking a week now. It's very interesting, just because you see the updates to the early vote count, and it feels like an elongated version of election night. We've got things like Zero Hedge, big jump in Kamala's Michigan odds, where she is again back on top. Wisconsin is also on the cusp of going back blue. After Trump had a comfortable lead in all swing states over the past week, he still leads comfortably in Arizona, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Nevada, and Georgia. There has been a reversal in Michigan and Wisconsin. So that, I mean, it kind of feels like election night. Okay, he's pulling ahead here. She's pulling ahead here. Even more so, it feels like election night 2020, where Trump is leading, has a significant advantage everywhere, only for Kamala to make some last-minute gains unexpectedly. Yeah, it just feels like election night stretched out over a week. But that is the latest from Polymarket. Trump still leading in most swing states, but Michigan and Wisconsin, apparently the early votes have flipped for Harris, slightly ahead in those. And that's lucky, because that's even without the 168,000, I believe, in Michigan, and the 128,000 in Wisconsin. Those votes that they attempted to cast that were stopped by RNC intervention. So, again, it's really just a question of whether they can cheat hard and fast enough to make it look like Kamala Harris won. And then that'll be it for America. It was some interesting new endorsements. Jake Paul has endorsed Donald Trump. Well, meanwhile, every person in Tim Walz's hometown has endorsed Donald Trump as well. A couple of interesting videos. There's also more videos of more bizarre, you know, inexplicable glitches that all, for some reason, happen to just benefit Democrats exclusively. Again, isn't it amazing how that happens? It really is something else. Find me a story where a machine glitches and turns a Kamala vote into a Donald Trump vote. It's like you found the golden goose. You found something of exceeding rarity. It doesn't happen the other way for some reason. For some reason, it just never happens. Whether it's like batches of mail-in ballots being found or being burnt or being like, it just doesn't matter. Whatever abnormality takes place, it always benefits Democrats. The machines are glitching out, it benefits Democrats. The rules get changed last minute, it benefits Democrats. Oh, the tabulation machine can't accept a certain type of ballots. Turns out that was a really good thing for Democrats, just every single time. It's very interesting. Let's go now to clip number 7. Kentucky voting machines are refusing to let voters select Donald Trump's name. They automatically select Kamala Harris instead. Let's watch. There's a person trying to click Trump, and it just doesn't happen. Oh, it selects Kamala Harris instead.
Well, it's probably just a touchscreen malfunction. It's a simple glitch. Well, it's funny how all of these glitches, all of them, every time go for Democrats. And the reason why this is so frustrating is because I remember this exact thing happening in 2016. I remember this exact video, more or less, happening, only it was Hillary Clinton's name that was getting lit up instead of Donald Trump's. So you're telling me that in 8 years or more, they couldn't have figured this out? They couldn't figure out what exactly this glitch was? I so clearly remember, because I didn't work at InfoWars at the time, and I remember arguing with people on Reddit about this. And pointing out, gee, all of these glitches always go for Democrats. This was in 2016. This was 8 years ago. Exactly the same thing was happening. We're going, well, it's just a machine glitch. I mean, you can't blame the machine for accidentally. And it's just like, okay, but laws of average, wouldn't sometimes it accidentally fill in the ballot for Trump? Wouldn't that just happen if it was just a glitch going on? So this is the Groundhog Day. Just Sisyphean nightmare we're in, where just for years upon years upon years, we have to deal with the same glitches, the same problems, the same excuses. Enough already, enough, enough, enough. There are also, there's more of this outrage about Trump, which again, you know, if you're a mainstream media viewer, I totally get how if what they said about Trump was true, it's crazy. It's crazy. If you think the last week was Trump just going, barnstorming rally to rally, and each rally is just like, women don't like it, but I don't care. I'm doing it anyway. And then he goes to the next one. He's just like, Liz Cheney should be shot in the face. Yeah, Puerto Rico's garbage. And then he goes to the next one, and he's just, you know, some other horrible threat. I mean, this is what these people, women are stupid. And everybody's like, yeah. And he's like, Joe Rogan, like, listen, it's just women are just stupid. Women, all women are very stupid, Joe. And Joe's like, yeah, you got a point there, Trump. Like, this is what these people actually think is going on. If you read the mainstream media, that's what they're reporting, is Trump is just every day going from rally to rally, just insulting women and telling us to kill Liz Cheney and calling Puerto Rico garbage. Like, if that's what Trump really was, holy crap. It would be, I get why Democrats are so psychotic. Imagine if you believed that that was Trump. He's just going around insulting and threatening and trying to murder people. And half the country is just like, yeah, we're into it. We love it. Women are dumb. Kill Liz Cheney. Puerto Rico's garbage. We're all for all of it. Absolutely. Yeah, it would make you feel, it would make you feel like you are living with crazy people, which is how we feel, because literally none of it is true at all, even a little bit. And this is what I was talking about, you know, a couple weeks ago, trying to explain that's not just, it wasn't one big lie. It wasn't like one thing about Trump. It's this constant drip feed. It's this constant manufacturing of scandal that just wears people down, and just they don't have time to research it, or they don't care about researching it, or they don't trust the video footage of Trump saying what he actually says. So it just builds, it compounds, and every one of these stories reinforces the lie these people believe to the point that they cannot be convinced that it's not true, even when you can systematically, one by one, disprove every, like, everything they've been told contributes to this idea of Trump is evil. You can singly go through and discredit each one of the things they're told, but at the end of the day, it almost doesn't matter because it's been embedded. It's been indoctrinated into them. It cannot be taken out of them. So even if you go through and you go, he wasn't calling Puerto Rico garbage. This was a roast comedian. He was making a joke. It was a twist. It was clever. It was very clearly a joke. I think he might even be Puerto Rican. Like, he wasn't calling Puerto Rican garbage. It's fine. It doesn't matter. They don't care. Trump wasn't saying all women are stupid. He was talking about the women on The View who are, by any metric, very, very stupid. Okay? So he wasn't talking about all women. He was talking about these women on The View. He didn't say Liz Cheney should be shot. He said she would be less willing and excited to go to war if it was her that was getting fired on. He wasn't saying, I'm just going to do this to women, even though they don't like it, talking about abortion or talking about, I don't know, kicking them out of school. Like, he was talking about protecting them. That was the context of the clip. I don't think we've covered that one. I don't know if our audience knows that one, but I don't think we have the clip here, but we have a clip about it from CNN. So Trump's giving a speech, and he's talking about how his advisors are telling him, don't call yourself a protector of women. He's going, I'm going to say I'm the protector of women because I'm going to protect women against illegal immigrants. I'm going to protect them against criminals by ensuring that criminals actually go to jail and aren't out on the street to abuse, harass, threaten, and hurt them. He's like, I'm going to call myself the protector of women. And his advisors go, you shouldn't do that. That doesn't sound, people don't like that. It's not going to resonate well. And so when he's giving the speech, he's like, I'm going to do it anyway. I don't care if they don't like it. I'm going to protect them. I don't care if they don't like me saying it. I'm going to say it. I will be your protector. I will protect you from illegal immigrants. I'll protect you from criminals. I'll protect your children from being groomed into a pedophile cult. He's talking about protecting women. I don't care if women don't like me saying it. I'm still going to protect them. That's what he was saying. So again, it's exhausting, right? We have to go through and try to explain the context of all of these statements. They're fine. They're all good statements. They're all reasonable and correct and logical and unique amongst the political class in calling out war hawks and warmongers and talking about the threat to women that illegal immigrants and an open border causes. These are good things. But they get to take it out of context, blatantly, ridiculously out of context, and then lie to everybody, and we can go through and systematically tell the truth about all of these things. But at the end of the day, the overall thought has been embedded. It's not coming out anytime soon. Trump evil, Trump hates women, Trump wants, you know, Trump violent rhetoric. This is what they believe. And you can talk to them. Like, here's a challenge. Go out to a Democrat who believes this crap and try to explain. Show them the full clip when they're like, he said Liz Cheney should be shot. Go, well, here's the clip, and show it to them, and they'll go, they'll watch the clip, and they'll go, well, it doesn't matter, because overall, his rhetoric, I mean, look at all of the things that he said, right? They go back to the years upon years upon years of lies about him. I've literally had this exact conversation with somebody about January 6th. I was trying to explain, like, no, it wasn't violent, it was a peaceful protest, they were fired on by the cops. The whole point of going there was so that the Republicans knew that, you know, the Republican representatives knew that the people had their back so they could challenge the vote, get a 10-day waiting period. Like, you try to explain all of that, and it's like, well, yeah, but it does. But look at all, but remember, he's always calling for violence. Remember how in the election of 2016, he'd say, like, take their coat, you know? So, like, okay, we're not dealing with this lie. We're dealing with 8 years of compounding lies. Every step of the way has been false, but it's hard to backtrack that far. We have a clip of this, so let's go to the clip of Trump talking about how he's going to be a protector of women.
They said, sir, I just think it's inappropriate for you to say. I said, well, I'm going to do it whether the women like it or not. I'm going to do it whether the women like it or not. Whether the women like it or not. Whether the women like it or not. Whether the women like it or not.
All right, so let's pause real quick.
Whether the women like it.
Because this is what we're seeing here. It's a split screen for our radio viewers. It's a split screen. What you're seeing first on top is the Kamala Harris ad that was cut from Trump's comments. So every time he's saying whether women are like whether women like it or not, they're showing a headline about like abortion being removed or whatever else, whatever other lie they can come up with about how dangerous it is for women to have to travel an hour to get an abortion. So that's what you're seeing here. So as it repeats whether women like it or not, they're showing all of these as if that's what he's talking about, as if he's saying, I'm going to make women get pregnant whether they like it or not. I'm going to, you know, whatever, to take women's children away from them, whether they like it or not. Like, the headlines are supposed to insinuate that that's what he's talking about. And then after this dishonestly and deceptively edited ad takes place, then you'll see the actual clip of what he actually said. So there's the context. Let's go back to the clip.
Or not. I'm going to do it whether the women like it or not. Kamala has imported criminal migrants from prisons and jails, from insane asylums and mental institutions all over the world, from Venezuela to the Congo, including savage criminals who assault, rape, and murder our women and girls. Anyone who would let monsters kidnap and kill our children does not belong anywhere near the Oval Office. And my people told me about 4 weeks ago, I was saying, no, I want to protect the people. I want to protect the women of our country. I want to protect the women. Sir, please don't say that. Why? They said, we think it's very inappropriate for you to say. I said, why? I'm president. I want to protect the women of our country. They said. They said, sir, I just think it's inappropriate for you to say, pay these guys a lot of money. Can you believe it? I said, well, I'm going to do it whether the women like it or not. I'm going to protect them.
Whether women are like it or not, I'm going to protect them. So again, you know, if you're listening to the mainstream media, it makes perfect sense why you would despise Donald Trump, why you think he's an absolute monster, because you believe all this crap. You believe the out of context, totally fabricated lies of the mainstream media. And I've talked about like four different lies in the last 3 days. So just imagine that for 8 years. Imagine for 8 years, every day you're being drip fed these lies. Every one of them as fake as the last, but every one of them contributing to the straw man illusion of Donald Trump, insane, unhinged, violent dictator. Let's see what CNN said about this. Clip number 16.
I said, well, I'm going to do it whether the women like it or not. I'm going to protect them.
All right. Why is Donald Trump telling women he will do things whether they like it or not?
John, that is grossly inaccurate what you just played. Play the full clip. Play it in its context. He was talking about the tragedy at our southern border that led to the death of Jocelyn Nungare. Jocelyn's mother has come out and endorsed Donald Trump because she fully believes that if Donald Trump was president, her daughter would be alive. And so what he was talking about was, I'm going to protect women. I'm going to protect children. And then he was just telling a joke. Really, he was telling a joke about how some of the staff said, no, don't say you would protect women, because they would take it out of context, obviously what CNN is doing right now, taking it out of context.
No. You have the exact right context.
Especially violent illegal alien criminals who have raped and who have murdered women in the United States.
Congressman, you just explained the exact right context was with Donald Trump's story was telling people how people close to him, okay, his advisors were telling him not to use that type of language, to say, I'm going to be your protector. And that is the context in that speech. No. That was what he was doing. And then he said, I'm going to protect them, the women, whether they like it or not. And I'm.
Okay, so what's the problem? So why bring it up and ask for a justification for it? So again, the real thing to understand here is that while you see all the lies from the mainstream media, and you realize why the average Democratic no information, low information, NPC type, I hesitate to use the word, but human being, then you're going to be fooled by all of this, and you're being tricked, and it's understandable. What's also understandable is that the mainstream media engaged in this deception knows exactly what they're doing. They know the context. They know it wasn't an out-of-pocket thing for Trump to say. They know he wasn't talking about abortion or anything else. He's talking about protecting women, and that he's going to say he's going to protect women even if they don't like it or his advisors don't like it. So they know the context. They're lying on purpose. The people who receive the lies, they're sort of innocent bystanders in this, naive, ignorant, trusting fools. They're both bad. They're both bad, and they both are bringing this country down, but one's more evil than the other. J.D. Vance went on Joe Rogan and had it's really excellent. It was really very good and almost better in some cases than Trump's appearance. J.D. Vance just has a different method of getting information across that is extremely compelling. Let's go to clip number four here. This is J.D. Vance on the real cause, the underlying purpose of mass immigration.
So it depends on how many tinfoil hats do you have in this room.
I got a lot. I got a wardrobe.
We can get real serious about this real quick or pretty crazy very quickly. Look, I think what is obvious is, and I've seen this in the halls of Congress, I've seen it very explicitly. You talk about lobbying, and we obviously talked about in the context of other industries. There is a massive corporate lobby for cheap labor in the United States of America. And that is, I think, the main thing that's going on. Think about this. If you've got millions of illegal aliens, okay, let me tell you a story. In 2017, 2018, when I was in the private sector, I was at a business conference dinner, and I was seated next to the CEO of one of the largest hotel chains in America. This is, I think, probably 2018. And the guy is going on and on about how much he hates Donald Trump. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Like, why do you hate Donald Trump so much? Because, again, I was sort of a Trump skeptic in 2015. And at this point, I was kind of, you know, starting to really get on the Trump train. And he said, well, the reason I hate Donald Trump, he says, is because Donald Trump's border policies have cut down the number of illegal immigrants. And because I can't pay illegal immigrants under the table anymore, I have to pay American workers, and they want much higher wages. And I was like, this guy just admitted it. I was like, holy shit, this guy just admitted
it.
That's
a crime.
That is like straight up monopoly man evil shit that this guy admitted to. And I was like, you know, my wife, who's very apolitical, she was actually at the dinner with me, and she's like, come again? You just said you don't want Americans to get decent wages. Like, that is the best argument for Donald Trump's immigration policy, is that American workers are getting higher wages, and this is why this corporate CEO hates it. So whatever the industry is, you've got a lot of people who want cheap labor, and they don't want to pay American workers higher wages. That's a big part of it. I do think there's also a power dynamic to it. In particular, I think Kamala Harris and the Democrats, they want to give these millions upon millions of illegal aliens the right to vote. They want to legalize them. They want to make it easier for them to participate in our elections. And that means fundamentally the end of American democracy. Because you're talking about 25 million people here. If Kamala Harris gives 10 million of those people legal status and allows them to vote in American elections, then, you know, say 70-30, they go Democrat. Republicans will never win a national election in this country in my lifetime.
And the only way to get them on your side would be the Republicans offer the same services and maybe even be more generous in letting illegals in.
Exactly.
I mean, you'd have to literally beat them at their own game. Yeah, like, I'm going to give you a free house.
Yeah, no, I mean, No, it would, lifetime's probably overstating it, but you'd have to, it would take 30 years for the Republicans to get to a point where we could even compete with these newcomers. But again, it will have degraded the voting power of the people who have the legal right to be here.
And it would essentially been here for turn generation. These states blue forever. It would turn the same blue. Way they've done California.
Exactly.
Vance, Biden-Harris border invasion, fundamentally the end of American democracy. And it's also not, it's also not just illegal immigration. It's illegal immigration as well, which is a huge issue. And that's why these terms are almost outdated. Because at this point, what is legal and what isn't? I mean, the asylum law is being abused and stretched to its breaking point. It's not actually legitimately being applied, but because they've found these legal loopholes and workarounds and manipulations they can exploit, technically they're legal, right? Technically, in the most severe, exacting way, I guess they're legal. They're asylum seekers. So it's immigration. We need to stop immigration overall. And the exact same thing that the chicken processing plants are doing to bring illegals in to undercut American wages, big tech companies are doing with H-1B visas to bring in scabs from India to undercut American wages, who then hire all of their friends from India and export all of the jobs to where their loyalty really lies. So it's not just the end of American democracy. It's the end of America. It's the end of everything we've built and everything we are. It's the end. If this is allowed to continue and if a major reversal isn't undertaken. With the extremity necessary. We'll be back on the other side to talk a little bit more about the election. I'll open up the phone lines for your calls in the second hour as well. Stay with us. Right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the American Journal. Second hour is on American Journal, Infowars.com, band.video. Steven Crowder posted a video yesterday afternoon. Poll judge login credentials found outside Dallas, Texas polling location on folded paper, including username, password, and election code. According to the Texas AG's office, it would either be for where you deposit the ballot at the counter or the e-poll book. Dallas County Elections Department, it's not supposed to be on the premises. We are not entirely sure of what we have here. We will continue to investigate. Here is the video. Poll judge finds login credentials outside Texas polling location on folded piece of paper. Let's watch.
Well, I'm working as a poll reader. I was going to check the count, and as I maybe about 20 feet from the door, I look down, piece of paper right here. So I pick it up, and I open it, and it's got passwords for the election machines. And just to make sure that, this was legitimate, I asked her, I said, hey, what's this? She said, yeah. She's like, that's the password to get into the poll books.
So can you show me this document?
This is
that's the form.
That's the login information to get into the voting machines.
Good afternoon, Dallas County.
So I just wanted to call. I actually wanted to report an incident related to some information that that was discovered outside of a polling location.
They found login credentials at a polling location.
And it was found outside of the polling location on the ground, a piece of paper folded up with, again, what looks to be like login credentials with the username, password, election code. Are you the right person to report that to?
Yes, I'm taking this down.
Oh, okay. Perfect. No problem.
What is your name, sir? Mr. Morgan, what is your phone number, please? I'm taking this information down and I'm going to send a ticket out to that location. And we're going to investigate this to find out who exactly it belongs to.
Are you able to tell us, like, is this something, do all the judges, do they share all the same passwords? Has this been reported lost?
No. Okay. They don't. So that's why we need to know who they belong to.
Okay, so would it be easy enough in an investigation to isolate based on having the information? Like, if I were to give you all of the data, like, I can email it to you, take a picture to see if it's an individual who lost this.
Can you email it to us, please? No, let's do this other one that would go to the managers.
I mean, is information like this supposed to leave the building or even really be written down in the first place?
No, it's not supposed to be, especially found on the premises. No, sir.
We'll see if they do anything. My main concern is that I email it to somebody and then it just disappears.
It sounds like someone may have found something in a parking lot, possibly, that could have information for a coworker login. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
I will tell you, it would not be for the voting machine itself. It would either be for, like, the where you deposit the ballot, right? Like the counter or the e-poll book would be kind of the two places where you would have that potential login.
Did you say a poll book?
Yeah, an e-poll book, which is basically where you look up, like, the registration. Like, when you go to check in, the e-poll book is where they look you up.
Okay. Can you guys put any pressure on anybody there locally within Dallas County to get to the bottom of it? Or?
Maybe so. Like, I mean, the thing is, like, I actually think that they will want to get to the bottom of it, too. Yeah, if it would be easier to text it to me, you can text it to me, or if you want to send it by email, that is an option, too, or what's easiest for you.
I just want to escalate this to the right people appropriately and then get to the bottom of it, really. Like, I'd like for us to know, like, okay, there's an investigation being done. We will find out what happened because this is just the kind of stuff that people can run with. So honestly, I think voters would really appreciate this is for you guys to be able to somehow connect with the right person. Because I think it's not necessarily putting pressure. I said that earlier. What I really meant was, like, is there somebody you can call and say, hey, this is important. Can you look into this? Because I've called the general helpline and I'm sure there's a bunch of nuts that call that, you know, and say different things about it. So about the election. So they're trying to sort through that. But I just want to be able to talk to somebody, get this information in their hands, let them do what they need to do with it and put it to bed. So that's what I'm really looking for. So
cool. Yeah, I will get that going and then we'll go from there.
Okay. Thank you very much, Alicia. I appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah. Rest easy, everybody. They're on it.
Voting.
They'll do it. Don't worry. They'll figure it out.
Welcome back, folks. We're going to continue to talk about the war going on here in the United States. Battles cropping up across the country. The war between the cheaters and liars and schemers in the Democratic Party and the Republicans trying desperately to just have a fair election, just be able to know who the people that are actually in this country actually want. It is a true warlike conflict taking place. Chief Trumpster put together a gigantic thread about this. I retweeted it yesterday. If you want to find it, you can go to my Twitter at Harrison H. Smith or Chief Trumpster at Chief Trumpster. Free and fair election, voters sent away early, machine glitches, ballot issues, lawsuits, and password leaks. This thread will cover ongoing voter issues impacting the 2024 election. On October 29th, voters in PA swing state were sent home early at 1:45 compared to the mandated time of closing 4:30. Trump sued over that and actually was able to get it reversed. We do not know where the order to close early voting came from. We do not know the chain of command in this matter or why police enforce an illegal closure of early voting. Will there be any consequences for this? Doubtful. Just mean posting fake apologies. Of course, this was actually confronted by the RNC, who got an order that polls are now going to be opened an extra day and even longer to deal with that. But again, it's asking the same question I was asking. We showed this video. Who are these police and why are they, like, who is ordering them to break the law and why are they doing it? It just makes no sense to me. It's baffling. Thankfully, Trump War Room sued and the county was forced to offer additional days of early voting due to the illegal early closures. So good on them. Sadly, the Pennsylvania problems don't end there. In Levittown, Pennsylvania, voters were turned away from early voting. Then workers said to trust them to hand their votes to them and they will definitely run it in the machine later. Know your rights. Stay in line. The voting issues extended beyond swing states, unfortunately. In Kentucky, electronic voting machines would not let a voter select real Donald Trump. The vote went to Kamala instead. Another reason why electronic voting machines are susceptible to problems that hand counting isn't. Michigan voter assist terminals had issue with splitting votes. They admitted this goes beyond Michigan. Officials said it's not possible to fix the programming for the affected VATs this close to the election, but note the issue will be corrected for future elections. So don't worry about it. Everything's under control. While officials claim they're upset about BATs having the programming issue, they cannot fix it for the deadline. This is a nationwide Dominion machine issue. What does accountability look like? Weird. Electronic voting machines in California do not display Trump's name unless you click more. Robert Kennedy Jr. is listed despite dropping out and endorsing real Donald Trump. While this may seem small, it's an extra step for voters to take. If they don't see the more button, they may think these are their only options. In Nevada County, California, an ink spray error with ballot printers impacted over 77,000 ballots. They were not able to be read accurately. Concerning, how many more errors aren't we hearing about? We played that video yesterday. Mail-in ballots are already being reported as missing. Washington voter ballots have disappeared in the mail. At least 200 or 300 voters have been affected. It's unclear if they will ever be recovered or the actual number of disenfranchised voters. In addition to mailed ballots not being received, there are reports of fraudulent mailed ballots in Pennsylvania. 30 irregular forms were found in Monroe County. One involved a deceased person, a Democrat voter. This is the third county reporting this in Pennsylvania. In Indiana, a voter tried to cast his vote. Turns out a mail-in ballot was returned from him already. He says, quote, I got up to the clerk. He gave him my ID. They said, wait a minute. Says here that you requested, received, and returned a mail-in ballot. And I was like, no, I didn't. That's not good. And again, the poll workers are trained to allow them to fill out a provisional ballot and then count the mail-in ballot anyway, even though they didn't send it in. This isn't an isolated issue. There are many reports of voters showing up to voting stations to find out they, quote, voted already. I'm guessing their vote was cast not for Trump. And again, you wonder how many people are choosing not to vote and so will never go to the voting, to the polling place, and will never be told that they voted already. How many people out there have votes in their names on the books being tabulated, having been sent in through mail-in ballots that actually never voted? We'll never know because the system was designed to be impossible to look into. I mean, there's no way of knowing. You just have a bunch of mail-in ballots. Somebody sent them back. Somebody filled them out. And so they count them. When the person shows up and says, no, I didn't, they go, well, too bad. We're counting the mail-in ballot anyway. It's crazy, but that's what's happening. Okay. It was designed this way. The system has been designed to not allow an audit to take place. Or the reality of the vote to be made clear. It's just that's how it's designed. This is why we need stricter voting laws, ID mandates, and further protections to be sure our votes are being counted and not being stolen. This woman is one of many who are victims of this. Same type of thing. Somebody voting on her behalf. There have been misprints of ballots reported in Wisconsin, a swing state. Notice the vertical text in the way of selecting Trump has the choice for president. This isn't present for Kamala. How many more ballots are like this? I know we've seen other things with, I wonder if he'll have it in this thread. Yeah, this is it. Additionally, there have been reports of Trump's name being spelled incorrectly. In Virginia, a swing state, notice how Trump has his name spelled Triumph. Triumph. So there's an I in the middle of Trump. Does that mean the vote will go to Trump or that it will not be counted? We don't know. A simple mistake or a deliberate subversion? It's impossible to tell. It's impossible to know. It has to be treated like subversion just for the safety and continual trust we have to have in our elections. This stuff has to be rooted out. And it doesn't matter. At a certain point, it doesn't matter whether it was an accident or on purpose. Every single time, these bizarre glitches, these strange accidents, this accidental misspelling all happens to disadvantage Trump. It's on purpose. It's by design. Let's keep going. In the most secure election ever, according to the head of CISA, over 98,000 marked American citizens lacked proper documentation of citizenship. A suit forced the Secretary of State to release the list. Why would Democrats be opposed to verifying voters are legal? So this was a decision made last night. I'll blow it up here. Defendants shall release to the plaintiff the original list of approximately 98,000 affected voters as specifically identified in this case. So basically, they were trying to withhold this list of people who did not prove that they were citizens. Now they've been forced to release it. However, the deadline is noon, Monday, November 4th. So who knows if there will even be time to act on this. We don't know. COVID lunacy has struck Washington State. Auditor Sheila Kreider refused to let observers monitor part of the election process. if they didn't wear an ineffective mask. The hilarious part, the reporter encounter and a counter in a mask-only zone were not wearing masks. This was another thing that they did in 2020 in the exact same video with the Detroit leaks, where they explain how if you have a mail-in ballot and somebody comes in and says, I never sent in a mail-in ballot, then you have them fill out a provisional ballot, and then you throw the provisional ballot away and you count the mail-in ballot. When that was explained as official training protocol to the poll workers in Detroit, they were also trained on and explained to them how they could use COVID to avoid oversight. That if a poll watcher was coming too close for comfort and was actually able to see what was going on, then you could, you know, shout 12-foot distancing rule and force them to move to a point where they can't actually observe what you're doing anymore. And if they refuse to do that or say that's not valid or say I am 6 feet away, if they argue with you at all, then you can label them as being combative. You can call the security and get them kicked out. So any poll watcher that actually wanted to watch the polls, any, you know, volunteer that actually wanted to do their job was prevented from doing it by the COVID protocols. And if they refused to follow those, then they would be kicked out. So only the good, obedient, and useless poll watchers would be allowed. So, I mean, all of these things, this was in official training caught on undercover audio. They were trained to use COVID to avoid oversight, and they're just doing what they were trained to do still here in 2024, 4 years after COVID is even a thing. Only the most secure election in history might would have passwords, codes, and other information out in the open. Right in Dallas, the video we just showed you, Steven Crowder found poll judge login credentials with username, password, and election code just laying on the ground. And there's the receipt showing the password and the election code. The biggest 2024 election integrity blunder goes to the Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold, partisan Trump hater that tried to take his name off the ballot, by the way. The Colorado Secretary of State left voting machine passwords on an official government website up until the issue became public. And that was something that we didn't touch on yesterday when we talked about this, was the fact that they leaked the passwords. The passwords have been public for 5 days, and yet the Secretary of State office hadn't said anything publicly about it. They knew it had happened, but they didn't make an announcement. They didn't admit it. They didn't say what was going on until somebody else discovered it, made it public, and forced the Secretary of State to respond. If not for that, these passwords would be out there. Bad actors could be taking advantage of them, and the Secretary of State would have never even admitted that this had taken place. And of course, it took place in 2020 as well under the same woman. And we actually have more stories about that as well, as we got to compare the actual password blunder from Jenna Griswold versus the fabricated password breach charges that were used against Tina Peters and put her in jail for 9 years. So we'll touch on that in just a little bit, but let's just keep going down the list, right? So far we've got glitches and shutting down the election, the voting early, and mail-in ballots filled out for people that they don't actually belong to, and other mail-in ballots going missing, and illegals signed up and on the voter rolls until the Republicans intervene and get them taken off. And all of these are just the ones that we know. I mean, these are the, you know, apprehended in custody and then let out into the country immigrants. These aren't the gotaways, right? So the gotaway voter fraud could be massive. We don't know. It's impossible to know. We don't know what we don't know. The key point is that the Colorado Secretary of State knew of this important password leak. They kept it up until the public heard about it. This is a very serious matter. The Trump campaign correctly labeled this a class 5 felony. Jenna Griswold must be charged. All these issues are just what we've heard about online and in the media. There are definitely more issues. You can DM Chief Trumpster to get these things added to the list, but a very, very thorough, if not fully complete, thread of voter fraud from Chief Trumpster. It goes on and on and on and on and on and on. And then you have CISA, head of the Cyber Security Administration in America, saying this is the most secure election ever anywhere in the world in history. Amazing. Isn't it all amazing? Let's go to a few more clips of J.D. Vance on Joe Rogan, because, again, there's really some very interesting stuff to be gleaned from this. Let's go to clip number 12 here. This is J.D. Vance talking about that whole Trump assassination thing, you know, where he was shot in the face by a sniper. J.D. Vance has some suspicions about this. Let's watch.
Communication yet.
Maybe I haven't read it as closely as you have, so don't take that as gospel
you're
truth.
Probably you have access to more information, but maybe you can't talk about it.
Trust me. There's nothing about this that I have access to information I can't talk about.
Well, there was a lot of weird stuff to it. One of them is that his where he lived was professionally scrubbed. So he got there was no silverware. There's no silverware.
That's
bizarre.
The place
is scrubbed.
Right?
Yeah, there's nothing. There's no...
Yeah.
No DNA, no hard drives, no nothing.
Well,
so
and how do you get that close? I mean, do you shoot guns?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm a pretty good shot. I served in the Marine Corps for 4 years. An AR-15 from 140 yards away is a
tip
pot
shot. Even without a scope. He didn't have a scope, yeah, right?
I don't believe he had a scope. Without a scope. I've shot an M16 many times and an AR-15 without a scope. It is shocking that he's alive.
Yeah,
right? it really is. I'm a person of faith, but I think it's a genuine miracle that guy didn't kill him. But how did he get so close? There's a lot of really big questions.
Well, he was walking around the area with a rangefinder before the event,
and people were yelling and saying,
"He's
on the roof."
Yeah,
you know, there was that crazy. I think it was a BBC reporter, somebody with an English accent, who did the report on the ground with the guy. You know, he's like got a MAGA hat on and a Bud Light. He's, you know, probably not a Bud Light. He's got some beer and he's talking to this guy who saw Crooks get on the roof, and he's yelling at him. It's an amazing clip. He's yelling at him like, hey, he's yelling at police officers saying, hey, this guy's on the roof, go and get him. And nobody responded to it. And the whole thing is very fishy to me. And I hope that we win and then get to the bottom of it, because I think somebody clearly screwed up.
The whole thing's very fishy. I hope we win and can get to the bottom of it. I mean, that's what's at stake here. Are we ever going to get the truth about Trump assassinations? Are we ever going to get the truth from our government ever again if the liberals win? Because what they want is not uncertain. You know, we don't have to guess what it's going to be like. We know. We've been living in it. And they've been telling us what their plans are. I mean, why do you think they're setting up the groundwork, laying the groundwork for, you know, disinformation boards to decide what is and is not information worthy of being spread? They want us living in a world where the actions of the government, the decisions made, the outcomes of the policies are all completely hidden behind an opaque barrier of official secrecy. Or we can have an open, honest, and forthright government that actually tells us the truth in an effort to make things better. Because this is the constant thing. We'll go to one more clip of J.D. Vance just to close out his conversation with Rogan. But like all of these things are associated. Because after that, we're going to play a clip of Elon Musk talking about how they're deliberately trying to turn America into a one-party state, which is completely possible, and the end of America as we know it, and it would be the Democratic state, and this is what's at stake, whether we have a government that has veto power over your speech and can silence you and hide the outcome of investigations. And it also, we're also going to play a clip of the opposite possibility, like the actual thing we can really do, and we will I'll explain that in just a second. Let's go to J.D. Vance saying the entire modern Democrat Party grew up in an era where there was consensus. Now they basically are just agents of chaos. Let's watch.
That's what's happened with a lot of old school liberals is they said, yeah, you know, we don't care what you do in your bedroom, but we believe in the fundamental right of people to speak their mind, and the Democrats just don't believe in that anymore.
So
and I've thought a lot about like what is going on there and what's driving it psychologically. And I think what's going on is the entire modern Democratic Party grew up in an era where there was consensus, right? Walter Cronkite could say something about the Vietnam War And it turned out he's probably right about that, actually. And it collapsed public support for the Vietnam War, where they grew up in America, where social trust was just so much higher. And I think that a lot of them are trying to reimpose that social trust on from the top, not recognizing that that high level of social trust came organically
right.
from the way that American society worked. And if you have people trying to reimpose it from the top, it actually degrades the very thing that you're trying to create. Because I've seen, I mean, family members of mine who got really radicalized because they were like, wait a second, should we be masking 3-year-olds in our schools? Like, does right. that do something to their language development? And then they would get kicked off of Facebook because a person with 900 Facebook friends who has no public profile dared to like question the prevailing narrative. And again, they ended up being right about it. I actually think that what the left is doing is degrading social trust by trying to create it from on high. And I kind of get the psychological impulse because, you know, like a lot of great things that we do come from high levels of social trust, but you've got to reestablish it organically. You can't try to force it on people.
That's such a brilliant interpretation from J.D. Vance. Again, this is why he's like the perfect partner for Donald Trump. Because Donald Trump couldn't really explain it the way that he did. I'm sure he gets it. J.D. Vance has a way of explaining it. You can't force societal trust from on high. It just doesn't work. It especially doesn't work when the people in power on high blatantly abuse their power, lie constantly. Like, they want to impose trust, but really what they want is you to stop questioning their lies. They want you to trust them even though they're lying. So it doesn't really work regardless. But also, you know, I would say that you've got to fold that argument into the immigration argument and recognize that it was the American people that trusted each other and created a culture by which you could leave your door open at night and it was fine, or you could have a handshake agreement with somebody with the assumption that they weren't going to double cross you for some immediate gain. And that's not really the world outside of America or Western Europe. I should have grabbed the clip, but there's a South Korean streamer that went to India, and he just gets scammed like 10 times in one day. Like, it's amazing. Literally, he goes to the hotel where he has a room booked, and they're like, no, we don't have your booking, and he gets all frustrated, but, you know, just loses out on the money. So he goes to a different hotel and they scam him and steal his money and say that you can't have, you know, actually we're not allowed to take foreigners here. And by the end of it, he's literally like on a train, just crying, just being like, I'm not going to be able to, like, I'm stuck here. I'll never be able to get out. We talked about it with Leonardo Joni. She was telling the story about the woman whose husband got injured or got bitten by a snake in India. And they just like did nothing to help him, like took him away in an ambulance, didn't tell her where it was. And then just like later she had to go and be like, where's my husband? They're like, oh, he died. Like, the rest of the world, like, it's understood that people are going to be scammed. Mexico, Italy, like anywhere I've been other than America, you have to constantly be on your guard of getting scammed. Americans maybe don't recognize, like don't realize like how special America is. I've told the story before, like being in Italy and they just want to get a little extra. They just want to scam you a little bit more. And it happens when Americans can speak Italian and they go, it happens all the time where, you know, sunglasses, you know, 50 euro. And the person will say in Italian, I just heard you tell that person they were 20. And the Italian person will go, oh, you speak Italian. Yeah, they're 20. Yeah, actually, they're just 20. I said 50 because I thought you were a stupid American. I was going to scam you. Like, it's like just an assumed thing in not Western European American countries. I mean, obviously, Italy is, but, you know, they're a little on the edge there. But that's what I'm saying. Even in the other Western countries, getting scammed, getting tricked, having one pulled over on you, like that's a very regular thing. In Mexico, you just assume you're going to have to bribe everybody, right? It's just an assumed thing. If you want to open a restaurant, you're going to have to grease the palm of the local government. If you get pulled over, you're going to have to grease the palm of the cop. It's just assumed. It's understood everywhere else. We don't live in a world like that in America. You're not supposed to do that. We all understand that. So when J.D. Vance is talking about, you know, a lack of trust, I'd say tie that into immigration and go, look, we can't bring in 50 million people from low trust societies, from societies where scamming each other or abusing your power and if you're in a position of authority, taking bribes, like these things are normalized and practically everywhere else. America, in a miraculous combination, in a unique time and unique people in history and on the world, we created a nice, honest, forthright, upfront culture is being destroyed from within by people at the top who want to destroy it for their own nefarious purposes, and people from cultures who think that we're all just suckers for being so trusting and trustworthy. Joined today by Tim Vetter and Fani Matravati. Tim Vetter is an engineer, data expert, and co-founder of CheckMyVote.org. Since 2020, he's volunteered countless hours for various election integrity organizations, and recently he has identified a litany of irregularities in Michigan, which Gateway Pundit has covered extensively. We talked about it yesterday. We're going to get the inside scoop here today. You can follow Tim on X at Tim Loves Ann, and on Rumble, Tim Loves Ann. That's A-N-N. Thanks so much for joining us, Tim and Fani.
Thank you
for having us on.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for coming on. Thank you for the work that you've done. The story we covered yesterday, and I'm glad you're on to get some insight into how this actually happened and what this actually means. From Gateway Pundit, Michigan early vote shocker, election integrity data analyst claims they have proof of 208,075 ballots cast by 82,674 voters. That's an excess of 125,428 votes cast. So tell me, how did you figure this out? Just walk us through what this actually means, because you hear this and you just think, how is that even possible? How can you have 82,000 voters casting 200,000 votes? Like, what happened here, Tim?
What happened is a mistake. They're calling it a glitch, where this kind of information that's happening on the back end just happened to get through their firewall, and it got published in the Daily Absentee Report. That's where Fani and I picked up on this information, and as well as other sources. You know, we're not the only ones that find this type of public information coming from the Secretary of State. So it's a very simple process. On our side, we quality check the data that comes to us. And when we're finding duplicate voter IDs in a list that should only have one voter ID, that's a red flag.
So that's wild. So you've got one voter ID, and then, but are they listed multiple times in different votes? And I understand you'll had to do some FOIA requests to actually get this information. How did you find this information? Like, what was the first thing that tipped you off? What was the first thing you saw that you thought, well, wait, that number's not right? Fani, if you can sort of walk us through, because I know both of you guys, you did this independently and then sort of peer reviewed each other's work, right? Explain to me how y'all worked together to come to this conclusion.
Yes, thank you. So I have a standing FOIA request that produces a daily absentee voter report from the day absentee ballots start getting mailed out, September 23rd in Michigan. So every day we get that file. Then we get two files, actually. One file that actually lists all the people who have received a ballot but have not returned it yet. Mm-hmm. And the second file is a file that's named Daily Ballots Cast. And that file contains a list of all the voter IDs who have returned their ballot. And there's a column in that file that says vote recorded date. And each row in that file is associated with a voter ID. Now, at Check My Vote, and you know, Tim and I, as we work together now and then, we do look for very glaring anomalies. And it's simple common sense things like, hey, you know what, if you're looking at a voter ID in a daily ballots cast report, well, common sense states that there has to be only one row per voter ID for a given election. Of course, this is the November 5th election talking about, because this FOIA is specific to the November 5th election. So Tim found out that there were the same voter IDs listed multiple times, sometimes up to 29 times. There were five times or six times. That would just jumped out right out of the the screen for us, really. And I also was parallelly looking at that, but not really into the detail that Tim was. But when Tim tipped me off on that, I said, okay, let's both look at it together. And we confirmed our analysis that there are indeed 82,647 voter IDs, unique voter IDs, that have in total casted 208,647, or but I don't know the exact number, but yeah, 200,000 excess right. votes. So
it's a giant disparity, right? It's crazy that our system has vulnerabilities that would allow something like this. And they show in this Gateway Pundit article, I'm sure you provided to them, an example of one voter ID used 29 times to vote in Detroit. One ID 29 times with 19 different addresses. So and then you can actually see, you know, the vote count here, and the all of these votes are recorded all on the same day. So how did this come about? Do you have any knowledge, like, were there 29 different ballots all sent in? Was the same ballot counted 29 different times? Do you have any idea about that? Or is it possible to glean that from the data that you guys have uncovered?
Well, unfortunately, the first question I had was, do each one of those 29 entries in the daily ballots cast file have a same ballot ID and ballot number or different? Because up until August primary, we used to get this FOIA fulfillment data that contained this very important data field, which if we had it now, we would have been able to tell whether each one of those entries received a different ballot, because the ballot IDs are different across those 29 rows, then that's like, yep, why were there 29 ballots sent? But we don't have that data field, and I have been trying to get that field from the BOE. They haven't given it to me. Two follow-up emails later, I paid extra fees for the second follow-up FOIA fee, where the UOCAVA field was missing, ballot address field was missing, which is very important because we want to see where the ballot is being sent as part of our work. We want to see where the ballot is being sent for the absentee voter. Order that was missing. There was application sent and application received fields. Those two were missing, and I had to send a follow-up email to get them, but had to pay extra fee, of course. But then this ballot ID is missing. If we had that, that would have been our next step to see if there are, you know, the ballot IDs are the same or different. So to answer your question, I cannot say that their ballots were counted or were there many ballots or not. Maybe there is only one, but the question remains because we don't have enough transparency in terms of the data being released to us, public data that being released to us. If we had that data, we'd be able to audit that too.
And
Harrison, if I could also add.
Yeah, please. I was going to ask you about this because I know you're quoted in the Gateway Pundit talking about the lack of transparency in this election in particular.
Absolutely. Transparency as well as auditability, right. Because like Fani was saying, they've always provided this information in the past. Why did they stop giving us the important information that's vital to auditing the absentee ballot tracking process? Everyone in Michigan knows that there's potential issues that can happen with absentee ballots. There's very little chain of custody as ballots are mailed out and ballots are tried to return back through the mail system. There's so many different ways that the chain of custody can be breached. So it's important that we as data people are able to audit that, and they have taken that away for this election. And for me personally, I call that election interference because we no longer have the ability to confirm whether these ballots are being properly sent and received. There's many additional fields that are missing that they have traditionally provided in the past.
Yeah, and that's so true. And did they give a reason why they're excluding these things? Because again, you're quoted in the Gateway Pundit, you know, talking about how, you know, in the 2020 election, this was fine. Up until now, it's been fine. But now they've just completely removed transparency for this election. Have they even offered a reason why, or they just did it and you're just having to deal with the fallout?
Well, there has been a constant chipping away at this transparency aspect. And I want to go back to the March 2024, because this is not related to the absentee reports, but there is another standing FOIA that I've got monthly on the first or the first week of every month. I get the qualified voter file. Up until February 2024, there is a special field in the history file of the voter file of Michigan that indicates whether someone voted absentee or in person or early. Now, we used to get that until February, but March, effective March of this year, they stopped giving us that field. And I proceeded to file a lawsuit, which is an active case in the Court of Claims. We've had two hearings already. But the point here is, well, the argument being offered from their side is that, well, if there is only one person that votes in early voting, for example, in a precinct, and based on that, if I can go to the precinct reporting results and see how many votes that certain candidate got, and there was only obviously one person voted, right? Mm-hmm. I'd be able to tell, glean, or deduce from those two data points whether that individual voted absentee or whether that individual voted to which candidate, right? Because there's only one vote. So it violates their constitutional right to secret ballot, which I totally agree with. I respect that. But that only occurs in about 2% of the cases. So there were only 161 precincts in the entire state of Michigan. To give you a little perspective on that, there are 4,500 precincts in Michigan, approximately 4,534. So that's about 2% maybe. So for want of protecting the constitutional right of 2% of the people, they're redacting the entire 100% of the file, which is what our argument is. Well, at least release us the 98% that, you know, we can't violate the secret constitutional right, secret ballot. So that's an ongoing case. That's one aspect of it. So that is their excuse on that, or stated reason, I'd say. But the absentee stuff, the exemption I got, the reason I got for not giving us these fields, initially there was no reason. They just did not give it to me. And I was too busy to ask. I waited a week or two, and then I asked. And then they said, oh, ballot ID is a non-responsive record. Hmm. In common man's terms, non-responsive record means they don't have it. And we are getting reports from various volunteers of Check My Vote that they're saying that these ballots do not have numbers on them. Some of them that are being scanned, they don't have numbers on them. I've got people who are actually texting me about this. And I said, well, I don't know what to do about that because I'm not in the operational aspect of it. I'm a data guy. I just look at the database and tell you what I find. And but that's really probably why they're not able to give it. But the whole idea about a ballot not having a ballot number, I don't know. Every dollar bill you have has a number on it, which right. is supposed to be unique.
No, that's crazy. So it seems deliberate, but clearly the outcome is there is no way, as Tim, you pointed out, it's unauditable, right? You can't audit this. You can't actually determine whether a vote cast was from the right person. What's being done about this? I know you've launched lawsuits, but it seems like as we're covering it in real time, you know, claims of voter fraud or some sort of malfeasance crop up, and the RNC is deploying people to, you know, get orders to reverse whatever problems that they're seeing. Is anything being done with this? Is there anything to do with this? Is the RNC aware of this? Do you know what the next step is in trying to, you know, figure out whether this is a big problem in the, you know, security of the election, and then what to do about it? Do y'all have any idea of what comes next in this regard?
Well, what I can say is that Laura Trump put out a tweet that said they have investigated the issue with the massive duplicates that was part of the tracking system that Fani was describing, mm-hmm. and that everything is good. Well, Fani and I are saying, no, everything is not good. There's so much data manipulation going on in the back end. All we get are some of the evidence that they failed to keep under wraps. I sent you some information since Fani was talking about the fact that back in February, they stopped giving us absentee and in-person. That was because we were documenting them flipping votes from in-person to absentee in the vote history file.
Wow.
And I provided this podcast a graphic that shows six different ways that they're manipulating vote history. Keep in mind, think about your bank account. You log in.
Mm-hmm.
You check all your transaction records. You don't expect those to change in the past.
Right.
But with when we certify a vote, an election, they should be locking down our vote history that they have certified, and that should never change.
Right.
And the problem that's going on with our vote history records, and this is a felony, it's stated in Michigan that you change vote history records after certification, that's a felony. But yet we have to the tune of millions and millions of changes happening all the time, modifying where we voted, when we voted, votes just showing up out of the blue, switching how we voted from in-person to absentee. We have all this evidence of wrongful activity, and there should be zero changes.
Wow. Yeah, and you're right. It's so strange that we're trusting the fate of our country to an election process that is actually less secure than your credit card or your bank account. I mean, it doesn't seem like it'd be so hard to, you know, have a system that is reliable and trustworthy. We do it every day with, you know, very big, you know, life threatening issues. But in this case, apparently everything is up in the air. Everything gets changed constantly. Nobody's held to account. It's clearly there's something by design here. I know we have a 2-minute video. I'm not sure if that's the graphic you were talking about, but we can play this video. And I know you want to talk over and sort of describe what we're seeing here. So if we can do that, let's go to this video and tell us what we're looking at.
Absolutely.
We're bringing it in right now. So why don't you set up for us what we're going to see here?
Absolutely. So what you're about to play is a video I just posted this morning because I'm trying to help communicate to the American people a lot of this data manipulation that is happening on a month-by-month basis. This is going to be an example going back to 2019. And it happens ever since Jocelyn Benson got into office. This is the kind of data manipulation that's happening with our vote history records.
Right.
Is the video queued up and ready to go?
No, it's still getting pulled in. I think we might be re-encoding it for our machine. But since you mentioned Jocelyn Benson, I mean, we did a big segment on her yesterday. We showed a video from about 6 months ago where she's saying that she and the six other secretaries of state of the six other swing states have been working together since 2020, collaborating together to face a common enemy that is Donald Trump. I mean, is it that she showed up and all these problems got started? And do you think there's some correlation or causation to that correlation?
I can't speak to that. All I can speak to is the data. That's my background. I can say that since she got into office in January 2019, we have received chain of custody from the Secretary of State, this data, and this data tells a story. You could see how from the day one, they flooded the voter rolls with registrations. There were people that voted six times in January of 2019. And then they figured out after a year that, oh my gosh, we got so many duplicates in our vote history file. Then in 2020, they started to overclean it. You got people like Gretchen Whitmer, who had her vote history records scrubbed. Over a million voters in Michigan had active voters, people like me and many other individuals, their vote history records were wiped clean for almost a year. And then you start seeing over time many other occurrences of votes flipping from in-person to absentee. You see double votes. That's exactly what you're showing now. It's just shocking. What you see here is the fact that you have the same election day and you have two different types of voting. The reason, and what I want you to notice is in the absentee voter column, they no longer give us that information. They don't want us to know that they're flipping those votes and they don't want us to know that there's double votes. When we exposed all this back in February, they wiped clean that data. I think it's very coincidental.
I think it's coincidental, too. Yeah, you don't have to comment on that. We will. I'm very suspicious of the actions of these people. Now, we do have that video ready, so we'll go ahead and play that, and you can narrate for us over top. So here's the video now.
Thank you. So what you're looking at here is I'm showing in SQL, this is the raw data that we get from the Secretary of State. The very top line is showing that it's from 2019, January of 2019. The second line, which is commented out, is October of 2019. So it's 10 months later. And what you're going to see with this is that when I run that query, I'm going to be showing over in the right side is absentee voter. You see no's and yeses, N for no, Y for yes. So N represents that this individual is voted in person. Am I an absentee voter? N for no. So I voted in person. And what I'm highlighting here is it's the election date of November 2018. Right. So in 2018, I voted in person. Now, what you're going to notice is I'm going to go up and I'm going to flip this. I'm going to write the query again, and I'm going to comment out that, and I'm going to run the exact same query in October. Hmm. Now, watch what happens to that election date, November 2018. When I run that query, did you see it flip from no to yes? So this is just one example of thousands and thousands that I can give where they're flipping these votes. Now, keep in mind that this is what gets past their firewall.
Right.
They have so much data manipulation happening on the back end that they can't control it. A lot of this leaks out and it ends up in our vote history records. So, you know, we get what they publish, and what they're publishing to us is completely inaccurate information. And I say completely with confidence because they have algorithms in there that not only change how we voted, but they're changing where we voted. I voted in Oakland County, and then if I move to Wayne County, all my vote history records are now Wayne County.
Wow.
And what's challenging about that is that prevents our ability to audit any past elections. And what's even more damaging about this is even though the statewide data says incorrectly where I voted, if I go to my local clerk, I can see the accurate information of where I voted. So wow. The information is not even in sync.
So it really is. It's just making it impossible to know whether a vote is valid or where that is wild. So I think I get it. So the same registry from January and October, it should have the same information, but clearly in those 10 months, at some point, somebody went into what is supposed to be the permanent ledger and changed, you know, backdated, changed former entries to something else for some reason.
It gets worse. It gets worse. Listen to this. For 2 years in 2019 and 2020, this was not an issue.
Right.
When did this issue start happening? It started happening right after the November 2020 election. You see zero changes. Then all of a sudden, January of 2021, right after that November election, 60,000, 200,000, 30,000 changes to vote history records right after the November election. Wow. It's all in the data.
And not only the data, there is firsthand corroboration with Check My Vote's users, because in Check My Vote, any user, any person can go put their address in and see their voting history, and it's transparent to the people. It's public record. And I have the Contact Us button on my website. People put in notes saying, hey, why does your website say that I voted absentee? I really voted in person in 2020. And I don't have an answer. I'm just showing you the data that we get from the Secretary of State. And sometimes that actually flip-flops, like Tim was saying. You know, suddenly it'll become like, oh, no, you voted in person. And then 2 months later to become absentee again, and it just disappears sometimes. So it's all firsthand accounts in Check My Vote. Users put in their notes. It's not me saying it. It's people are saying it on my website, and the data speaks to it too, like Tim just indicated.
Wow. Yeah, it's not your data. It's the data from the government that you're just presenting at checkmyvote.org, checkmyvote.org. And is that a nationwide thing that everybody can go check their vote, or is this just for Michigan?
It's just for Michigan, Ohio, and Tennessee right now. And we haven't launched in other states because just I can't scale. This business is like kind of hit the point where I can't do more than three states. So we're just at three states now.
Well, it's a good start. We need it for all 50 states. And I just hope that people with authority to do something about this are being made aware of it. So I ask our audience to support these guys. Go to checkmyvote.org. You can follow Tim on X at Tim Loves Ann. That's also his Rumble channel, Tim Loves Ann. Fani Mantravati, is there a way people can follow you on X or any other social media?
Yes. Yes, X. I'm at Deluxe Cypher.
At Deluxe Cypher, and checkmyvote.org. Well, it's bombshell
stuff. P-S-Y-P-H-E-R.
bombshell stuff you guys are coming up with, and thank you so much for sharing this with us. And again, I hope that this leads to some action and some corrective measures, because we cannot live in a so-called democracy when you can't tell who anybody voted for and everything can be changed arbitrarily, backdated. It's just astonishing what you guys are coming up with. Thank you so much, Tim Vetter at Tim Loves Ann and Fani Mantravadi at checkmyvote.org. Thank you guys so much for coming on and sharing that with us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Stuff, folks. Third hour on the other side. Stay with us. Back, ladies and gentlemen. Third hour of the American Journal is on. It's Friday, November 1st, and we are reporting in real time the schemes the Democrats are running being uncovered, exposed, and counteracted by the Republicans as the election night shenanigans are now a week or month-long affair. And we're watching both candidates rise and fall in the polls. We'll continue to discuss some of this. We're also going to get into what's happening in North Carolina and some very disturbing reports coming out of the flood-affected areas. We'll get to that in just a second. But one question that Elon Musk did a great job of answering is, what is at stake in this election? Why is this election such a big deal? You have some people going, it's another election, you know, who cares? Everything's going down the drain one way or another, or everything's going to be great one way or another. Like, people think it's silly to call this election the most important election ever, but it's clearly not. And if you're watching trends, demographic trends, political trends, we are at an inflection point. We're at a tipping point. The course of our nation and the future of humanity itself will be decided in just a few days. And that is a very powerful and in a way thrilling thing. Elon Musk explains that what is really at risk here is that should Trump lose, America itself is very likely to become a one-party state forever. Let's watch.
What I see happening under the sort of Biden and Kamala administration is a deliberate attempt to import as many people as possible into swing states like Pennsylvania, in order to ensure that America becomes a permanent one-party state. The numbers are truly staggering, and the sort of fake legacy media doesn't report on them. The only reason anyone knows about it is if you're on the X platform. But, like, it's crazy. This is from the government website, by the way, which is run by Democrats. So, like, you're seeing, like, in some cases, like 700% increases in the past 3.5 years. In illegals in swing states. What a coincidence. And when you're talking about elections that are won or lost by 10 or 20,000 votes, and then you bring in 200,000 people, and then you put them on the fast track to citizenship, this is without considering any cheating. This is legalized. If that happens over the next 4 years, there will be no swing states. They're importing voters. That is I think that's obvious to anyone who looks. And we will have a situation like we have in California, where it's a one-party state. California is a supermajority Dem state. And so it's one-party rule. And if you have one-party rule, that's not a democracy.
Yeah, it is a very real risk, and that's definitely the path the future could hold for America becoming a tyranny, being a one-party state where it'll be like California. I mean, that's the perfect way to explain it. You still have pockets of California that are deep red. You still have a lot of conservatives in California. They just have no power, no authority, can't get any of their policies passed, constantly overwhelmed by the votes of the Democrats. So you can still exist, and you can still participate in the political process, and maybe we'll throw you a congressman or two as a token show of how we're still a democracy. But at the end of the day, your beliefs will be criminalized, and your ability to live your life the way you want will be subject to the approval of millions of people who hate you and want you to live differently. So that's the future that we could take. There is an alternative future. There's an alternative future. It involves doing simple and obvious things. And it's one of those things where if you talk to a socialist and you say, you know, point to me a successful example of your policies in action, they start coming up with excuses of, well, it would be successful except, you know, American imperialism stopped it, all of this nonsense. We actually have something to point to. It's a little country called El Salvador. It used to be the murder capital of the world. Here's what it looks like today. Look, beautiful, safe, prosperous, doing incredibly well. This is maybe the most frustrating part about all this. We aren't speculating. Our ideas, the ideas of just throwing criminals in prison, of having a strong state actually working for the citizens, has been proven to work incredibly well in El Salvador. Let's do that.
I used to believe everything I'd see on the news, but that's before I discovered a brain.
A brain is meant for everyday use. Those living with moderate to severe stupidity have seen immediate improvement in common sense with a brain.
I thought the government had my best interests at heart, and then a friend told me about a brain.
Talk to your doctor about what news sources you obey. A brain may also lower your desire to take life-altering advice from celebrities.
Getting lectured about my carbon footprint from people with three private jets used to make sense. But thanks to a brain, now I can think for myself every day. When my disregard for third grade biology began to flare up, I knew it was time for a brain.
Do not try a brain if you're allergic to a brain. Common side effects may include accountability, discernment, homeschooling your kids, a better understanding of economics, awareness of the stupidity of socialism, and diarrhea.
For tethering yourself to reality, the only no-brainer is choosing a brain. Ask your doctor if a brain is right for you.
For more information, visit tryabrain.com.
I thought we'd start off a little bit of humor because things are about to get really dark. Things are about to get very dark, but that is very funny. By the way, speaking of homeschooling, Donald Trump has announced a $10,000 tax credit for people that choose to homeschool their kids, which is brilliant and amazing and could revolutionize schooling in this country. And really just makes perfect sense. I mean, if you're choosing not to send your kid to school, really they should be, really the tax credit should be the amount that your kid would cost the school system. Like if you break down the amount of money a school system uses divided by the number of kids it serves, it's more than $10,000, right? It's like we pay something like $25,000 per student. At least that was a number I'd heard somewhat recently. It could be much higher now. It depends on the school system as well. In bigger cities with bigger bureaucracies, you're spending more per student, actually, even though you have so many students and so many taxpayers, it costs even more. So $10,000, it's a good start. You know, it's one of the things I'd heard. It's just such a simple idea where it's like, okay, imagine instead of having, you know, instead of sending your kid to public school, imagine sending them to a micro school where they each have, you know, it's a class of 10 kids with one teacher. Well, if each kid got $10,000 tax credit, then you're paying that teacher $100,000 salary to teach 10 kids for a year. That's like, they're going to get a better education than that money would get them when it has to go to pay for the bureaucracy and the campus police and just all of the crap that comes with public school. If you break it down by student and think, what else could we get with this money? How else could this money be packaged in a way that would actually service the children? And having little homeschooling co-ops, it would be so easy if every kid got a $10,000 tax credit and that $10,000 could go directly towards paying a teacher's salary or paying for the facilities to operate in. It could actually, like, forget destroying the Department of Education. The education will atrophy from, you know, the Department of Education will atrophy from lack of use if this actually goes through. People will just start sending their kids to the school at the end of the block with the 12 kids from the neighborhood. They'll be safer. They'll be better educated. They won't be indoctrinated with transgender ideology. It's a win-win-win-win-win. It is a true education-changing suggestion from Trump. A very brilliant policy that he has just put forward, and I know is getting a lot of traction amongst everybody. I was hearing my sister talk about it yesterday. So anybody with kids, if they know anything, is kind of terrified of sending their kids to public school, as they should be nowadays. It's terrifying. So let's get into what is happening. Let's check in North Carolina, because I've been hearing a lot of very disturbing rumors that are coming from lots of different sources, so I tend to believe they're true. One of them is that the Red Cross has decided that they're done in North Carolina. And again, I'm getting conflicted. Half the people are saying Yeah, the Red Cross said, well, we're done. You know, job well done. We're finished here. There's nothing more for us to do, so we're going to leave. And the other half is saying the Red Cross is actually saying, this problem's too big for us. We're not going to be able to handle it, so we're not even going to try and backing up. Regardless, it's the same situation that we see play out anywhere in the Western world. In Spain, we were talking about the floods in Spain. By the way, I need to get into that too. But just as a sort of side note to that, there are videos coming out of African migrants on balconies of four-star hotels, like filming the people in Spain who are cleaning up the trash. So people in Spain have had their homes destroyed, are living in rubble or makeshift tents, while you have four-star hotels occupied by African migrants who are literally filming the cleanup going on, laughing at the people cleaning up while being given four-star hotels by the government. It's the exact same thing that happened in North Carolina and Asheville and all over the southeastern United States, where you have FEMA with inordinate resources, five-star hotels, $2,000 checks, free babysitting, free laundry, free housekeeping for the illegal immigrants. But the American citizens who've had their homes, lives, towns, and families destroyed literally get nothing. Nothing. And there's a lot of videos coming out about this. Let's just go to a few of them. First, we'll go to clip number, I believe, 20 first. This has to deal with the suspicions that people had. That was really confirmed by the governor of North Carolina, where he talked about, you know, these lands could be hugely profitable. We want to, you know, mine lithium, or we want to do other stuff with them. And, you know, now that they've been destroyed by a flood, well, people will be a little bit more willing to sell where they weren't before. So there is certainly aspects of massive, ridiculous land grabs going on here. But it goes far, far deeper than that. And the reported behavior of the government in North Carolina right now is truly shocking. Let's go to clip 20 now.
Let's talk about North Carolina. So a few days ago, I told you guys that the Red Cross was pulling out of North Carolina. They were pulling their shelters, that their services were no longer needed. If you go to the Red Cross website, it actually says that the hurricane victims, that it was too big of a project and they weren't able to assist it. The result of the Red Cross closing their shelters has resulted in 2,700 children being removed from their parents' custody and placed in DCS custody. The blue-collared men who were trying to build the roads back have now been cut off from the gravel at the quarry, and it is only available to the DOT and the railroad. So they're not able to help build that road back anymore. They were trying to use the mud, but it was just falling back down, of course. It's mushy. It's not. It has no structure to it. So the residents of North Carolina have basically been told to sell, that they weren't going to be able to build back. And so we've heard all about this. We've seen all about this. It's just basically falling right into what we thought it would. Is it a coincidence? I mean, what the hell are you guys doing down there? You're not helping. You're making a bigger mess. These people have lost everything, and now you're going to take their children away from them? Do you think their children want to be placed in the state's custody after everything that they've gone through?
So yeah, that's the report coming out, is that the federal government is, people have had their houses destroyed. They're in a state of crisis. The federal government is not helping them rebuild, not giving them a shelter, not providing them hotels like they do for the Guatemalans that arrived yesterday. Instead, they're saying, oh, you live in a tent now? Your kid has to come with us. You are no longer capable of providing for your child. So now we have to take them from you. I mean, that's what's being reported all across North Carolina. Let's go now to clip number 17. DCS is threatening to take Hurricane Helene victims' children from them. Let's watch.
You know, you wouldn't think that it could get any freaking worse for the people in Western North Carolina, but guess what? The government said, hold my beer. So I was tagged in those videos yesterday where they were talking about DCS coming in and threatening to take these children from their parents because they don't have adequate housing. So I had to do my due diligence because I don't want to spread misinformation. So I got a hold of my family and I got a hold of friends that live in that area, in Yancey, in Spruce Pine, up in Burnsville. And I asked them, I said, please, for the love of God, tell me that this is not true. It's freaking true. So I'll give you one instance that I know of that my friend saw with her own eyes. It's a small trailer park, okay, in Spruce Pine. Looks like it did day one all this happened. Nothing's been done. Nobody's been there to help these people clean up, okay? My friend and her community are doing everything they possibly freaking can to help these people. So she tells me that FEMA and Red Cross pull out of the area, right? Which is fine. They weren't doing anything anyways. They were just taking up space. But as soon as they pull out, DCS comes in and starts evaluating these parents. It starts telling these parents, if you don't get adequate housing, we're going to have to take your kids into state custody. DCS, explain to me how this is going to happen. Explain to me. Because every time we try to bring a tiny home, an RV, something for these people to live in, they get stopped. They're trying to make them have certain requirements. They're trying to give them restrictions. They're trying to make them get permits. Like, what in the hell? And then on top of that, explain, do you understand that that ground, that land is saturated? It's unstable. So you're very limited on where you can put if we get anything for these people to live in. Where are we going to put it? So between the restrictions, the requirements, the permits, and then the freaking land not being stable, what are they supposed to do?
We are being occupied by a hostile government. Like, there's really no other way of putting it. You know what? Say it against. It's the same thing when it comes to criminality or any other topic. If it was anarchy, fine. Fine. If there's just no government, we'd be fine. Hurricane comes through, your neighbors get together, you fix it up, fine. If we had tyranny, classic traditional dictatorship tyranny, you would assume at least some aspect of the tyranny would be used to justify itself by actually serving the people. And you know what? If that was the case, it'd be better than what we have now. You know what? If the government wants to have incredible power and incredible resources and incredible capabilities, if they actually used it to benefit the people at least a little bit, then great. That's a trade-off we can make. All right, you take my tax dollar, you take half my money, and when a hurricane comes through, you give me a new house. Well, all right. Sort of like an insurance thing. I mean, we can make that deal. What we have now is a government that can spend hundreds of billions of dollars on wars overseas or illegal immigrants in our country who can be provided with transportation and they get taken care of. They get free food, free shelter, free clothes, free phone, $2,000, credit card you can spend on anything, plus a couple thousand dollars, maybe $30,000 in food stamps. Go ahead and have that. You can stay in a 5-star hotel. We'll provide you maid service and free childcare and extra tutors for your children. And they get absolutely everything. And when a hurricane hits North Carolina, the government shows up to take their kids. We are occupied by an enemy government. And it really is as simple as that. And in addition to the land being saturated and unstable and the government stopping individuals and private citizens from providing trailers or tiny homes by imposing regulations during this disaster, emergency, crisis situation, there are reports of massive radiation in certain parts of the affected area, making it dangerous for anybody to even be there. Linemen, in addition, have not been paid and apparently working and having to live off their own money, not even being given a per diem to have a place to stay while they work to restore power to the affected areas. We'll talk about that in just a second. But first, here is another video. This one said the American people might need to start heading to New North Carolina to help protect our fellow Americans from a tyrannical government. And he also mentions the radiation threat that is posed to people working in the mud area. Let's watch.
Okay, well, here's a little update for y'all. First off, the stories are true. The water is contaminated. It is toxic down in Lower Swannanoa. All right, I got confirmation of that, and I confirmed it again today when I met some people over in Swannanoa. There's a couple good outfits over there, okay? They're doing good things. But the mud, if you're down in Lower Swannanoa working, you might want to use protective gear, okay? Proper PPE. Wrap your boots up. Bag your boots, tape them up, wrap them up. When you get done walking around in the mud, dispose of them properly, okay? Don't get it on your clothes. Don't track it in your truck. Don't take it back to camp, okay? The mud and the water is toxic. There is radiation in it. The air reading. They did a radiation reading of the air, and it hit 27 on the meter. Now, supposedly, it's not harmful unless it hits 40. Well, from what I've looked up, that's... But yes, there is radiation in the air down there. Also, Red Cross has pulled out of many locations. They pulled out of up to 4 locations. And now the Department of Social Services and Child Protective Services is coming in. And they're going in looking in campgrounds. They're looking for families that are in tents. They're looking for families with kids. And since Red Cross pulled out and they got displaced again, 4 locations of people got displaced again whenever Red Cross pulled out. Now, the state is coming in with Child Protective Services and trying to take the children from the families, the parents that were affected by the disaster. That's absolutely...
Yeah. Yeah, it's... I got nothing to add. Honestly, I got nothing to add to that. Although we do have one more video. I forgot it's got a lot of curse words. TikTokers love cursing. You know that? Makes it very hard to play their videos on the radio. So the crew is censoring one more video that we'll bring you here in just a second. It has to do with the linemen not being paid, as well as, again, the regulations and the government actually coming in to hamper and make more difficult the citizen volunteers who are actually trying to help the affected in North Carolina. We have been betrayed. That's all I'll say for now. We have been absolutely betrayed. But yeah, guys, let me know when you have that video censored, and we'll go back to it, and then we'll combine them when we put this video out later. But I want to, I guess while we wait for that to be censored, I want to go to this article. It's from brownstone.org. They are scrubbing the internet right now. Instances of censorship are growing to the point of normalization. Despite ongoing litigation and more public attention, mainstream social media has been more ferocious in recent months than ever before. Podcasters know for sure they will be instantly deleted and debate amongst themselves over content in gray areas. Some like Brownstone have given up on YouTube in favor of Rumble, sacrificing vast audiences, if only to see their content survive to see the light of day. It's not always about being censored or not. Today's algorithms include a range of tools that affect searchability and findability. For example, the Joe Rogan interview with Donald Trump racked up an astonishing 34 million views before YouTube and Google tweaked their search engine to make it hard to discover, while even presiding over a technical malfunction that disabled viewing for many people. Faced with this, Rogan went to Platform X to post all 3 hours. Navigating this thicket of censorship and quasi-censorship has become part of the business model of alternative media. These are just the headline cases. Beneath the headlines, there are technical events taking place that are fundamentally affecting the ability of any historian to even look back and tell what's happening. Incredibly, the service archive.org, which has been around since 1994, has stopped taking images of content on all platforms. For the first time in 30 years, we have gone a long swath of time since October 8th through 10th, since the service has chronicled the life of the internet in real time. As of this writing, we have no way to verify content that has been posted for 3 weeks of October, leading to the days of the most contentious and consequential election of our lifetimes. Crucially, this is not about partisanship or ideological discrimination. No websites on the internet are being archived in ways that are available to users. In effect, the whole memory of our main information system is just one big black hole right now. The trouble on archive.org began on October 8th, 2024, when the service was suddenly hit with a massive DDoS attack, which not only took down the service, but introduced a level of failure that nearly took it out completely. Working around the clock, archive.org came back as a read-only service where it stands today. However, you can only read content that was posted before the attack. The service has yet to resume any public display of mirroring any sites on the internet. So what's behind this? Who is responsible for this? And how could this have happened? I mean, you don't carry out a DDoS attack and take down Internet Archive, archive.org, without some sort of greater purpose in mind. Now, likely, or possibly, I should say, this was carried out by the Internet Archive themselves, who wanted to take down the site for a little while to scrub information that they don't want you to see. Because it's not just the internet that archive.org documents and preserves a record of, which is obviously extremely important, especially when it comes to the changing nature of the media landscape, where a story will be silently altered, you know, without a note at the end saying the original version of this story said this. We have corrected it for this reason. None of that. They'll just change it secretly, and it's only by going to the Wayback Machine or archive.org that you can find what it originally said. That's obviously very important, but I would argue possibly even more important than that are the records of publications from before the internet even existed. We know that one of their primary vectors of attack against freedom and liberty and humanity itself is to destroy our history. Orwell called it out in 1984. If you want to destroy people, first destroy their history, destroy their knowledge of history. And it's always been, you know, there should be multiple internet archives. It's obviously a flaw in the system that there's no redundancy in any of this. I think it should be publicly funded. I think it's like a necessary service that needs to have a guarantee that it will continue to exist into the future. But there are millions of magazines and newspapers and books, history books, and just infinite amounts of stuff on archive.org. In the Internet Archive, I do sometimes just spend hours just clicking through and just, I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy what you can find there for now. It's crazy what you can find there for now, because who knows what's going to remain and what's going to be removed. Because again, it's not just about removing the internet and the preservation of information online. But it's also about destroying history itself, and they can get books taken off of Amazon. And they can even confiscate books from the library if they want. But once they're scanned and uploaded to an internet database, it can be preserved forever into the future for generations to learn what life was really like back in the old days. So who knows? Maybe this takedown was not so much about the internet as it was about all the stuff before the internet. We can see how the way the world used to work. They want us to forget that that existed. I'm going to go to that video now. This is another report of what exactly is going on in North Carolina from another TikToker. Thanks to the crew for censoring it. Here is, again, the report of what's happening with the linemen who have been working feverishly to restore power to the affected areas ever since the flood happened several weeks ago. Let's watch.
It's absolutely mind-boggling. You have huge teams of linemen now going on strike in the Asheville area because they haven't been paid in 8 weeks. Most of them are sleeping in their trucks, paying money out of their own pocket for food. They were not even released their per diem so they could pay for their housing. And I don't blame them, but what is wrong with this government? What is wrong with your governor? I mean, you've got Red Cross pulling out. You've got DCS threatening to take people's kids. You have FEMA, who is basically a no-show and doesn't have anything set up for anybody. You know, there's housing everywhere in Alabama sitting on an airfield. You know, they've got FEMA trailers, campers galore, but yet they're bitching and complaining about permits that they need to put these tiny homes on people's properties. And the FEMA grant, who gives if it's a grant or a loan right now? They're not giving it to anybody. Half the people who have applied for it haven't gotten. You've got veterans, you've got people who have lost everything, lost their homes, trying to jump through hoops to get information to the FEMA places so they can collect their pitiful $750. And you have thousands of folks that have applied for this FEMA grant and have been denied for every single reason. And the only reason they should be getting their grant is the fact that they are without a home. Doesn't matter if they were employed prior or not. But if you talk to these people, the only folks that are getting that FEMA grant are people on welfare. Where is all the thousands of trailers and manufactured homes that are sitting in lots right now that could be warm with families in it? Instead, they're cold and being threatened by DCS to have their children taken away because they don't have anywhere to go. And, you know, Red Cross said, yeah, there's not much to do here anymore, so we're f***ing out of here. But these linemen out there doing that job are f***ing vital. And without them, nobody's going to have their power. So everybody needs to start calling the governor's office and saying, what the f***? Where is the money to pay these people?
Crazy. And again, to me, the most sort of illustrative part of that is the fact that if you want to get that if you lost your house and want to get that juicy $750 loan from FEMA, you have to be on welfare. You have to not have, you know, not be a contributing member of society. So first, you know, prove that you're a drain on the system, and then we'll give you more. Yeah, so apparently people are applying for the pittance $750 loan from FEMA after they lost their house. Like, you understand, the government is spending more money strictly on plane tickets to fly immigrants into cities than they're giving to people in North Carolina who lost their homes in a flood. They're getting $750 plane tickets to fly from San Diego to New York City, where then they'll receive the credit card, then they'll receive the food stamps, then they'll receive the five-star hotel, then they'll receive the free childcare. All of that is on top of the $750 plane ticket to get them there in the first place. But if you're an American citizen whose family has spent generations building an area from the ground up, establishing civilization in a wilderness, and a tragedy befalls you, the government that you've spent your whole life paying into won't even give you $750. Loan it to you. They can't even manage that. You understand there is no level of incompetence that explains this. There's only malice. There's only anarcho-tyranny. Now, I debated whether to play this whole video or not, and maybe I'll pull this out after a little while. But it's Jeffrey Sachs. He's giving a brief history of modern U.S. imperialism. Really, he's just explaining for the umpteenth time the timeline of events that have gotten us gotten us damn close to a shooting match with the world's largest nuclear power, Russia. I think it's worth it to watch and to listen to, because not only is he giving you the full-fledged breakdown, the step-by-step insider view as he was actually a part of some of the events that he describes, I also think it's worth it in just looking at the events from a objective point of view rather than as an American. trying to justify what our country's doing. Just imagine you're not American. Imagine you're a space alien and you've just arrived and you've heard this story about the way this country is acting. Listen to the way that the U.S. and our power and our strength and our respect and our everything. I mean, just our money, everything. It's all us. It's all America. And yet it's in the hands of these worms, of these despicable civilizational arsonists who walk around like they're the most powerful people in the world because they are dragging America behind them like a dog on a chain. Okay, without us, without the American people, these people would have nothing, but they cloak themselves in our flag and go overseas and start wars that kill millions of people and avoid backlash or justice entirely by, again, hiding behind us. And so if you really want to get to like the heart of the issue in America, it's the fact that these interlopers, these usurpers, cloak themselves in our flag, drain our resources for just the relentless shedding of blood overseas. It is the worst thing ever. And Jeffrey Sachs breaks it down point by point exactly how this happened. So again, as you watch this, as you listen to this, just think about how it would feel to be any other country being abused in the way that America abuses our friends and our foes and have for decades and never paid the price for it. Let's go now to clip number five. Here's Jeffrey Sachs.
Let me just explain in 2 minutes the Ukraine war. This is not an attack by Putin on Ukraine in the way that we are told every day. This started in 1990, February 9th, 1990. James Baker III, our Secretary of State, said to Mikhail Gorbachev, NATO will not move one inch eastward if you agree to German unification, basically ending World War II. And Gorbachev said, that's very important. Yes, NATO doesn't move, and we agree to German unification. The U.S. then cheated on this already starting in 1994 when Clinton signed off on a basically a plan to expand NATO all the way to Ukraine. This is when the so-called neocons took power, and Clinton was the first agent of this. And the expansion of NATO started in 1999 with Poland, Hungary, and Czech Republic. At that point, Russia didn't much care. There was no border other than with the Königsberg, but other than that, there was no direct threat. Then the U.S. Led the bombing of Serbia in 1999. That was bad, by the way, because that was a use of NATO to bomb a European capital, Belgrade, 78 straight days to break the country apart. The Russians didn't like that very much. But Putin became president. They swallowed it. They complained. But even Putin started out pro-European, pro-American, actually asked maybe we should join NATO when there was still the idea of some kind of mutually respectful relationship. Then 9/11 came. Then came Afghanistan, and the Russians said, yeah, we'll support you. We understand to root out terror. But then came two other decisive actions. In 2002, the United States unilaterally walked out of the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty. This was probably the most decisive event, never discussed in this context. But what it did was trigger the U.S. putting in missile systems in Eastern Europe that Russia views as a dire, direct threat to national security by making possible a decapitation strike of missiles that are a few minutes away from Moscow. and we put in two Aegis missile systems. We say it's defense. Russia says, how do we know it's not Tomahawk nuclear-tipped missiles in your silos? You've told us we have nothing to do with this. And so we walked out of the ABM treaty unilaterally in 2002. And then in 2003, we invaded Iraq on completely phony pretenses, as I've explained. In 2004-05, we engaged in a soft regime change operation in Ukraine, the so-called first color revolution. It put in office somebody that I knew and was I was friends with and am kind of distantly friends with President Yushchenko because I was an advisor to the Ukrainian government in 1993, 94, 95. And then the U.S. had its dirty hands in this. It should not meddle in other countries' elections. But in 2009, Yanukovych won the election, and he became president. And in 2010, on the basis of neutrality for Ukraine, that calmed things down because the U.S. was pushing NATO, but the people of Ukraine on the opinion polls didn't even want to be in NATO. They knew that the country is divided between ethnic Ukrainian, ethnic Russian. What do we want with this? We want to stay away from your problems. So in February 22nd, 2014, the United States participated actively in the overthrow of Yanukovych, a typical U.S. regime change operation. Have no doubt about it. And the Russians did us a favor. They intercepted a really ugly call between Victoria Nuland, my colleague at Columbia University now. And if you know her name and what she's done, have sympathy for me. Really. Between her and the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, Jeffrey Piat, who's a senior State Department official till today. And they talked about regime change. They said, who's going to be the next government? Ah, why don't we pick this one? No, Klitschko shouldn't go in. It should be Yatsenyuk. Ah, yes, it was Yatsenyuk. And we'll get the big guy, Biden, to come in and do an attaboy, they say. You know, pat him on the back. It's great. So they made the new government. And I happened to be invited to go there soon after that, not knowing any of the background. And then some of it was in a very ugly way explained to me after I arrived how the U.S. had participated in this. All of this is to say the U.S. then said, okay, now NATO's really going to enlarge. And Putin kept saying, stop. You promised no NATO enlargement. It's been, by the way, I forgot to mention, in 2004, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Bulgaria, Romania, Slovakia, Slovenia, seven more countries in the not one inch eastward. And then, okay, it's a long story, but the U.S. kept rejecting the basic idea, don't expand NATO to Russia's border in a context where we're putting in goddamn missile systems after breaking a treaty. 2019, we walked out of the Intermediate Nuclear Force Treaty. In 2017, we walked out of the JCPOA, the treaty with Iran. This is the partner. This is the trust building. In other words, it's completely reckless U.S. foreign policy. On December 15, 2021, Putin put on the table a draft Russia-U.S. security agreement. You can find it online. The basis of it is no NATO enlargement. I called the White House that next week after that, begging them, take the negotiations. Putin's offered something, avoid this war. Oh, Jeff, there's not going to be a war. Announce that NATO's not going to enlarge. Oh, don't worry, NATO's not going to enlarge. I said, oh, you're going to have a war over something that's not going to happen? Why don't you announce it? And he said, no, no, our policy is an open door. This is Jake Sullivan. Our policy is an open door policy. Open door for NATO enlargement. That is under the category of
Bush. Let's go ahead and pause it right there. Because I think that is unbelievably important. They're sitting there going,
we're not going to have Ukraine go into NATO. Russia is saying, we're going to go to war with you unless you announce that Ukraine is not going to go into NATO. And they go, no, we're not going to announce that. Like, you understand that this is, none of this has been a blunder. None of this is a blunder, right? We didn't blunder into bombing Serbia for 78 days straight. We didn't blunder into doing the thing that Russia said was a red line for them, and that would be, and that would mean war. And it goes on and on. I could keep playing it, honestly. Just search Jeffrey Sachs. And it's a video that's being posted all over X right now. Just go to X and search Jeffrey Sachs if you want to see the whole thing. But again, it shows that, like, it's not just that the Ukraine war isn't evil Putin, Hitler reborn trying to take over the world. It's decade upon decade upon decade of the power and influence and resources of the American people being hijacked, usurped, and used as a weapon for the political machinations of the likes of Jake Sullivan or Bill Clinton. What have we gained from this? Well, where we're at now is on the cusp of, if not very much already in, World War III. The story from today: U.S. weighs NATO allies offer to shoot down Russian missiles over Ukraine. So we are now at the point where North Korean forces are traveling to Ukraine. America is saying, if you allow North Korean forces to fight in the front, then we're going to remove restrictions for the use of American weapons on Ukraine, meaning that Moscow will likely be targeted directly. Russia has said that if these long-range weapons are used to strike into the heartland of Russia, then nuclear weapons are on the table. They're holding ballistic missile tests and war games to get their nuclear forces ready for deployment. Poland is talking about shooting down Russian missiles over Ukraine. So, like, it's happening. It's happening. We've been describing it since the war first broke out in 2022. I don't know how many times I've said on this show just how reminiscent it is of World War I and World War II. The people don't want it, where the justification is false, a lie, or just doesn't make sense in general. And yet, we go towards war. And yet, we just keep moving towards war. It's impossible to stop, apparently, because the people in power want it. And they'll do what they can to propagate propaganda into the American people and convince us to go along with it. But whether we do or not, doesn't really matter. They're going to do it anyway. They're going to order the troops on the ground. The troops are going to follow orders. And we'll be in World War III, and we'll pay the price for it. And the people that send them into war, the Liz Cheney's out there, will make billions of dollars and get off scot-free, if history is anything to say about it. So it's entirely America's fault that we're in this. There was a peace agreement as early as a few days after the beginning of the special military operation. But the powers that be in NATO and UK and US decided they would rather sacrifice 600,000 Ukrainian soldiers. And so that's what they're doing. And that's probably a low number. I mean, Trump himself on the debate stage says he's seen the real numbers, and it's millions of people that have been killed as a result of this. And yet the people that have set these things in motion, that have set the stage and really force Ukraine's hand in this, force Russia's hand in this, you know, they're not just not paying a price. They're still in charge. They're still doing this. They have for decades. And Victoria Nuland is now joined some NGO version of what she was doing, starting color revolutions in the United States, and they're doing color revolutions here instead of, you know, under our name. And I talk to people that think the same, you know, similar thing is going on in Israel with Israel, where the people in Israel want the war to be over. There's like 100,000 displaced Israelis who can't return to their homes because of the war in Lebanon. And there's certainly a similarity where you've got the people of Ukraine suffering, the people of Israel suffering, and America funding and backing both of them, basically saying we are willing to fight to the last Ukrainian, fight to the last Israeli. And they mean it. And they mean it. They will depopulate these areas rather than allow our imperial ambitions be curtailed. Bipartisan leaders of the U.S. Helsinki Commission are pushing President Joe Biden to approve Warsaw's proposed scheme to shoot down Russian missiles, according to a letter sent on October 28th obtained by The Hill. The letter, sent by Representatives Joe Wilson of South Carolina and Steve Cohen of Tennessee, very important business for Tennessee and South Carolina, that Poland be granted the authority to intercept and neutralize missiles over Ukraine, particularly those threatening to encroach upon Polish airspace. It's just completely insane. It's completely insane, and we have a chance to end it. We have a chance to end it, and if nothing else, and this was my argument in the debate with Michael Tracy, Donald Trump, at least, if nothing else, he has the authority and the gravitas to actually get us to peace, which Kamala Harris, she obviously doesn't want peace, obviously not interested in peace, has presided over the outbreak of both of these conflicts, Israel and Ukraine, and allowed them to continue indefinitely with no restrictions whatsoever. Any restrictions we do attempt to apply get completely ignored, and we send them billions of dollars anyway. So she does, I mean, even if she wanted to, which she doesn't, she wouldn't be able to. Right? Donald Trump says that he does want to end these things. Apparently, the latest report is that he's given Bibi Netanyahu a deadline to end the war. I wonder if it's before he gets inaugurated. But clearly, with his statements about Liz Cheney, like, he's an actual human being. He actually cares about people. He actually cares about the dead people involved. He doesn't want to fight to the last Ukrainian. He wants the fighting to end. They keep asking him, do you really want Russia to win? He's like, I don't care. I just want them to stop fighting. A lot of people think that that is a lie. A lot of people think that he's just going to get in and like start a war with Iran. He's not. He said he's not. J.D. Vance has said he's not. He said he's not interested in regime change in Iran. So we have a chance here in less than a week and in 4 days to stop World War III in its tracks, to actually do what our ancestors failed ahead of World War I and World War II, to put a stop to the insane warmongering machinations of the demons that run the world by electing Donald Trump, empowering him with the authority